are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, March 29th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, looking back on the week that was, with Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show. Also on the program, Judy Gold, who will be bringing all of her favorite expletives to discuss the President of the United States. Meanwhile, Barr seemingly has no intention of letting Congress see the Mueller report. And a federal judge rejects Trump's end-run assault on the Affordable Care Act. That Fifth Circuit case, however, continues unabated. Mitch McConnell wants no part of repeal and replace Part 2000. Supreme Court allows bump stock ban to stand while challenges continue. And HUD sues Facebook over discriminatory ad practices. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell dropping another nuke on the Senate will speed up judicial confirmations. The third Brexit vote fails in Parliament, and it is a total cluster shag. New York State bans single-use plastic bags. Second state to do that. And why they used to call Joe Biden the senator from MBNA. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I should also mention, too, that I was trolled on Twitter about having Marcy Wheeler on twice. I think we actually had her on three times. I'm not sure. It was either two or three times, but I think two or three times to discuss the ongoing Mueller probe. And which took place of course, over the past year and a half, 2 years. And so I was trolled on that. And I've been wanting to have a conversation with those people who have been feeling, I guess, so vindicated by, to the extent that we know what the implications of the Mueller investigation were, I guess presumably just that there will be no more indictments. We don't really know the scope of what Mueller found, but we do know there's no indictments. So there will be no criminal charges brought against the president. Now, of course, we knew that wasn't going to be the case anyways, because the DOJ says you can't bring criminal charges against the president. But there'll be no criminal charges beyond the campaign manager and some of his close affiliates. Well, so to the extent that we know anything, there's been some people have felt, you know, very vindicated, I guess. Which I think I'm not sure exactly what vindication that they were ostensibly seeking. You know, we have been, I think, pretty measured in our coverage of the ongoing investigation. I think from day one, we thought there were financial shenanigans, but that the idea of Donald Trump being a Manchurian candidate was pretty far-fetched. I think two or three interviews about an ongoing investigation of the President of the United States is probably warranted. Maybe people didn't think there should be an investigation. I'm not quite sure. We'll find out. But so we were criticized. I was asked to apologize to you, my audience, for having Marcy Wheeler on two or specifically two times. But like I said, I think we had her on three times, although I'm not sure about that, over the past 2 years. So that would have been somewhere in between approximately 400 to 500 shows. We dedicated almost 1% of those to covering the Mueller report. And so I am afraid, however, that I will not be issuing an apology to you folks for that. I still think there is more of the story to tell, and I suspect that we will hear more about it in the oncoming, ongoing weeks and months. I am perfectly comfortable with having had Marcy Wheeler on, and I would still encourage you to continue to read her, because I think we're going to get, as over the months and weeks and years, perhaps, we're going to get more information as to what went down with this administration. And so, however, I've wanted to find out exactly what all the hubbub is about. I mean, Michael Tracy is one of those people. I've issued some invitations to others. He was the first one who seemed to be completely available. And so we will have him on today at 1:20 or so. So we will have him. He didn't want to call in like a schmuck. And I will say this. I don't appreciate the implication that people who call into the show are schmucks. But maybe he can address that. Maybe he'll apologize for implying that. Meanwhile,
Frankly, it's McCarthyite. To call people who call this show schmucks conjures some of the worst imagery of our history.
You're trying, in many respects, to silence people.
I think you're silencing people who want to exercise their First Amendment in a very politicized atmosphere.
Very politicized. But we will get to that conversation later in the program. In the meantime, it has been 1 week now that the report was handed in by Robert Mueller. There have been reports that the investigation, that the full report is 300 pages. My understanding is that if it were 300 pages, including all of the actual elements of evidence, that would be rather small. Just from, you know, casual conversations I've had with people who've been involved in these type of investigations. So we don't really know. And after a week, there does not seem to be a plan as to what Congress will be able to see. Within a couple of days, I think the deadlines for both the Senate, or particularly the House, Gerald Nadler of the Judiciary Committee has demanded it. I suspect that they will be going to court in within a week or so to attempt to force the Attorney General to give that report to members of Congress. I think we went through exactly the same thing with Watergate. Wasn't that the case that the Nixon administration was forced to hand over the report? I seem to remember.
After arguing executive privilege?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've been down this road before. Again, the White House could be just refusing to release the report because they want to maintain some type of executive privilege as to protect the institution of the presidency. It could be, you know, for future presidents. It could be because they also think politically it makes the Democrats stick their neck out a little bit. I guess if there's, you know, nothing in the report that it's completely exculpatory for Donald Trump. Or it could be that there are certain things in there that they think might be problematic to the narrative that they're building. We don't know. And like I say, we'll probably see court cases coming in the future. However, with all this said about the report, this is, I think, Fox and Friends comes up with the most interesting take as to why we might not want to see the report.
And by the way, the headlines really are so negative. On a positive story for the president, they can't handle it because 300 pages are coming out soon. Here it is. The Huffington Post, the Mueller report is hundreds of pages long, which raises the question, how accurate can a four-page summary be? You never heard of summarizing? New York Times says Mueller report exceeds 300 pages, raising questions about the four-page summary. Like, what questions? That it's not 300 pages? And Mueller's report on Russia and Trump is more than 300 pages long. That's what we all knew that ahead of time.
And, Brian, like you said, the summary thing, everyone is probably thankful. We don't have to read 300 pages. We all will, probably. But you at home,
no, you
won't. Probably not going to sit down and read 300 pages. You want the summary.
I have a confession. I never read the Odyssey. I only read the Monarch Notes. I got a very good grade.
Passing.
Yeah.
Passing.
I love the fact that she says, we will probably. I am willing to bet that no one on that couch will read the 300
pages.
Yeah,
reading's for nerds.
I just don't think that's going to happen.
I don't even know who I'd bet on.
I would bet on the couch for having a better chance of reading that 300-page report.
I bet on because he's a friggin' historian.
Oh, is that right?
Read his books, yes.
I did not know that.
Extensively on Islam and the barbarous pirates.
He often has a co-writer, but...
What does that mean?
Yeah, that never hurts. All right, well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon will be joining us. Benjamin Dixon's show will be joining us.
From He, Him, I.
You always stepped my girl. Like Angle Rock, Mechanicsburg, Anchorage, and Dar es Salaam. We'll own the New York with champagne and disco. Tapes from LA / San Francisco. But actually, Oakland and Alameda. Your girl was in Berkeley with a communist reader. Mine was in tune with a boombox and Walkman. I was a horrible girl that was back then. Gloves and love, the wisdom teeth are lost. What you on about? I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my bones. I'm stronger now. I'm ready for the house. Such a modest love. I can't do it alone. I can't do it alone. Every time I see you in the world, you always step to my girl.
We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the proprietor and host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Sam, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
So let's talk a little bit, and I just mentioned earlier that we're going to have an unplanned call to Michael Tracy, who to talk to why he is so adamantly excited about the Mueller report. But we, of course, we haven't seen the Mueller report yet. We have we have only seen the three or four page letter that purports to top line it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And also to say that the attorney general has made the unilateral decision to not pursue obstruction charges, which, you know, many people think was really more the purview of Congress, because, of course, a president can't be charged with this stuff anyways, or can't be indicted as a sitting president, is my understanding. But with that aside, what do you make, and just, you know, putting the the report aside, and we can also, I mean, any element of it if you want to talk about.
Right.
But specifically, the idea that somehow Congress will not get access to a report that has not been either redacted or edited by the White House seems to be highly problematic.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, it's part and parcel for the Trump administration, right? It's not surprising, but I would think that particularly journalists who at least pretended to be objective in this process would look at that. And that is a story. That is a major story. That is a major problem. That is a problem for our functioning government. So no matter how it plays out, right, whatever is in the report, I'm not one to believe that Barr went too far off course. You know, I'm sure he obviously didn't state anything that could have been damning to Donald Trump. But the fact that this is not being shared with Congress really sends off more red flags. And, you know, I know you have a Michael Tracy on, and full transparency, I just had to mute him this week on Twitter because he's so excited about this. And my question for him, and I've asked him on Twitter, but it's like, if we came into this with objectivity, right, and we had, even if we were just hedging our bets, maybe something's going to come of this Mueller probe, maybe something's not. At this point, you still can't celebrate because of the way the Trump administration is carrying on about redacting this document before anyone in Congress sees it. So objectivity would say, hold your horses and let's see, let's explore this story of why the balance of power in the United States, the checks on power are not going to be allowed to operate and function properly.
Right. And I think, like, you know, I mean, certainly it's been my opinion, I think the unanimously on this show, I think that the speculation and the coverage has been excessive. And, you know, I think we've articulated, but it would be also rather odd to completely ignore an ongoing investigation of the president of the United States that,
yeah.
And it's not like, I mean, earlier this week, I think I used the metaphor, like, you know, this is like the cops think you have a dead body in your car. And it turns out you only have 10 kilos of cocaine, but you drive off anyways. I mean, there's going to be speculation as to, like, maybe you do have a dead body in your car and people start to follow you. But I think, like, even if the even if it turns out that you just have your, you know, a overdue book from the library in the trunk of your car,
right.
If you drive off as the cops are approaching you, right. Thinking that you have a. And it's not, you know, it's not that often that the president of the United States fires the FBI chief who is doing this investigation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's an odd situation. These are odd times, however. I'll have that conversation with Michael Tracy more because I think, you know, one of the things about this, I certainly don't know that I would be dedicating this much time, frankly, to the Mueller report until we would see it. But,
right.
You know, there's apparently at least some element of our media universe that and frankly, our political universe that thinks that there is some type of accounting to be had for talking about it at all during the course or recognizing that it existed or, you know.
Right.
Having some curiosity right. as to what was going on. I mean, we did have a lot of indictments that came down. I mean, if anything, this certainly, to the extent that people were skeptical of the, what was it, 12 or 13 GRU operatives being indicted
right.
in absentia, mm-hmm. this certainly makes those look like they're more legitimate, right? I mean,
right.
So I don't know, but I guess, go ahead.
Well, the only other thing I would say about this, right, is like if we look at it purely through a political lens and by political lens, I mean like political hackery. Right.
Let's right.
Just, you know, this is what media does right now. Right. Our media entertainment complex. So MSNBC did run up their ratings with this in an obscene way. But, you know, it really speaks volumes to me that we have people who are ostensibly on the left. I don't really even know what Michael Tracy considers himself. I'm going to stay tuned in to hear the conversation. But, you know, we're expecting and demanding a level of accountability from MSNBC over this Russia probe. And we're demanding that accountability through Fox News. Like, we're actually going to do it through the largest propaganda machine that we've seen in American, as far as I'm concerned, in American history, right? The hypocrisy alone should be enough to choke them so that they cannot breathe. But I mean, we're expecting something of, it's such an asymmetrical battle that, as ridiculous as I think MSNBC has been over the last 2 years, people are actually demanding a level of accountability that they have never asked for from Fox News. And while a lot of people want to get above that fray and they think, you know, it's we should expect more from the left or from the ostensible left, I really just believe that it is representative of how far conservative propaganda is free to reign in this country. Right. And while MSNBC is playing the same political hackery hack job, now we're talking about, you know, firing people and doing opening up new investigations on the left and, you know, holding the media accountable and going back and checking on the Obama administration. It's like it's not a healthy environment any way you cut it, but it really leans itself towards pushing America further and further towards the right. And people who are smart enough to know that really should be careful about participating in this rightward shift that this Mueller probe, the results of this Mueller probe, seem to be taking America.
Well, I will say this, that I think that, you know, I think they're, you know, for people who perceive themselves as a specific type of reporter or journalist, that I think it's perfectly appropriate for them to not have an investment or operate under an investment of you know, what ideology it helps. I mean, I certainly think that people hid behind that during the Bush administration and helped the Bush administration many times. It was my experience. Mm-hmm. But, as a general principle, I think that's appropriate. But you make a good point. It's very difficult to offer a media critique of a CNN or an MSNBC, tacitly endorse Fox. I mean, that is seems right to me to be a fairly untenable position to have. And sometimes the endorsement is larger than tacit. I mean, certainly even I think, like, you know, Rachel Maddow, who I think, like, largely people would agree, gave over her show to mm-hmm. the Russian story. She would do other stories, right? I mean, so, like, the idea that people would be like, well, you're missing out on the story that she did about, agribusiness or whatever. I mean, I don't watch the show enough, but I know that she does other stories. I think if somebody came out that, those same people who might also praise Tucker Carlson, let's say, for being brave enough to say X, Y, or Z and overlook the sort of, like, the core of what Tucker Carlson does, you know, that cuts both ways. You know, like, if you I think that's the point you're trying to make.
Right. It definitely cuts both ways. But it also, you know, and I agree with you, like, the veneer of being an objective journalist. I mean, I think we might can find one in the wild. I think they may actually exist. But in reality, man, we're in such a hyperpartisan America that the idea of both sides or the idea of being objective really automatically leans itself towards conservatism in this country, right? You know, we like to laugh and joke, truth has a liberal bias, but no, money has a conservative bias, and money is being poured so much into the right wing persuasion of this country that the machine is set up such that, you know, anything that isn't purely right wing propaganda at this point is considered to be like socialism, like Che. You know what I mean? It's considered to be Castro. Right. It's so out of proportion that objective journalism really should be able to understand that you cannot go on Tucker Carlson simply because he's the only person that gives you a platform, when everything about his show, everything about this whole media complex in this country is pushing us further and further towards the right. So objectivism really almost would protest participating in those types of shows. That's just how I'm feeling this morning, though.
All right. Well, so with that said, too, let's talk a little bit about, and I imagine we're going to see some, getting back to the substance of it, imagine we're going to see some court cases coming up about this. But let's talk mm-hmm. about some other court cases that are taking place. The Trump administration has joined in the Fifth Circuit court case, which was brought by multiple states. I can't remember how many, 16 states maybe it was, that basically are arguing because Congress got rid of the mandate, essentially, with the ACA, removed the tax penalty that was associated with not getting health insurance, that it invalidates the entire law. Under the theory that when Congress made the law, they had it include the mandate, and that was an essential part of it, and Congress would not have passed the law without the mandate, so it's not severable. On its face, it's a laughable case because Congress came back and made the decision to get rid of the mandate, and mm-hmm. they were fully aware that the rest of the law existed. They did not have the will to overturn the entire law. So the case itself is sort of a joke. It's being weighed in the Fifth Circuit. And the Trump administration has joined in, much to the chagrin, it appears to be, of Republicans in the Senate and the House, because they got their clocks cleaned over this issue. So, right. I mean, first off, politically, huge political mistake, we should say. And I would add just one more thing about the report, and this is more from a political perspective. That report, the ongoing investigation and the potential threat, and, the obstruction thing was a jump ball, apparently, I think inhibited the Republicans' ability to pass legislation that was bad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
until I'm convinced of which I think prevented real world bad outcomes, right? Like literally the loss
right.
of health insurance for hundreds of thousands, not millions of people, among other things, in terms of like real world, from a political perspective,
yeah.
The real world outcomes of that would have been devastating. And I think, relatively speaking, in terms of the real world outcomes of what has been going on with, as a result of the over-reporting on the report, I think balances out pretty well, at least from a political perspective. But back to the specifics of this, how does this play out? Because if Democrats can run against Republicans on health yeah. insurance again in 2020,
yeah,
we simultaneously have a fight amongst the Democratic contenders for the primary on health insurance as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this just seems to be lining up in a very, very good way for people who want, to get closer or to get to single payer health insurance.
Yeah, I think it's ultimately going to be a net win. How quickly can we actually get to a single payer system, and how long of a gap is there going to be between that victory and what's happening in the courts right now? I think that's the important question, especially for people who are dependent on the ACA right now. There is a path towards a good political victory there, but what does that look like, and how long does it take? Now, in terms of just the raw political victory, I don't know if you and I talked about this maybe almost, 6 months, maybe a year ago, but like you said, that was a net win in terms of this Russia coverage. As obscene as some of it was, as excessive as a lot of it was, I'm going to be honest with you, we had no other way of jamming up the system. So in just pure, raw, political analysis and, you know, kind of like a Machiavellian kind of style of politics. I mean, what other play did we have when we did not have the House and the Republicans had everything? And so we were able to jam them up long enough to get where we are right now. Similarly, the Republicans are actually, you know, handing us a win because somehow or another, we were able to turn the Obamacare into the Affordable Care Act, right? It was no longer stained with their hatred, with Republican hatred for Obamacare. It became necessary in so many people's lives that it became popular and something that Republicans paid a price for, as you can see in the midterm. So now they want to run on it again. By all means, let's do it because it is as necessary today as it was back before the midterms. So I think it's a net win in a very long, well, I don't want to say a long-term look, but in terms of the political outlook, I think there's a really easy path if Democrats actually nail their messaging and actually just take them to task. Similarly to like the Special Olympics fiasco, like that is definitely something that you want to be able to run against, something that's clear cut and that is that's really no question when it comes to political advertising and running a campaign.
And Trump had to reverse himself on this, but you know, that to me is so mystifying. Like just the level of incompetence, the sheer, I just don't understand that at all. You know, like the Special Olympics thing is just sort of, it's stunning. It's stunning incompetence. First off, they were never going to get those cuts.
Right.
Those cuts are never going to happen. You know, Congress is simply not going to pass a budget where they cut money for the Special Olympics.
Right. So even to just float that idea.
To float that idea is just like, hey, listen, I'm not going to do anything about it. But, you know, if we could, I just want you to know what we would just how horrible of human beings we are. Just like how callous we are. And, you know, I mean, I don't know with what voters they think that would appeal to. I think it's like it seems to me it must be like, you know, Mick Mulvaney. Like it's like a purely an ideological thing. Like we are just the idea. If we are contributing and helping folks in our society who need, you know, who need the help in some way, like, and we're not allowing the sort of the philanthropic world to fully fund it, that we are sort of ideologically impure or something. I mean, this is just sheer, the ideology itself is sheer insanity. And politically, it's sheer insanity. I'm at a loss almost to understand this.
I understand it a little bit more and more every day. Because there's a level of narcissism and a level of overconfidence in your ability that really lends you towards being extremely vulnerable to your stupidity. And this is exactly what is happening with the Trump administration, and particularly Betsy DeVos. Right. She and Trump probably had his fingerprints on this beforehand. I don't know the backstory of how they came up with this ridiculous idea, but they're just super confident in their ability to get away with whatever they want to get away with. And when you have that level of narcissism running through your veins, you're going to actually do a lot of things that are stupid. And the real question is like, how can the public hold you accountable for that level of stupidity that you reveal through your narcissism?
Yeah, I'm blown away by that. And you know, Trump had to reverse himself. He also reversed himself, I guess, on a on the Great Lakes preservation thing. Maybe he just wanted to be, you know. And part of it could be just that he, I mean, the only other thing I can imagine is the dynamic that there's a dynamic of like him wanting to be the guy who comes in and like fights government. You know what I mean? Like he's fighting his own government in some fashion. And like, I'm like, he's setting it up to be a white knight. Like I, maybe that's too clever or, you know, and maybe, but I have a feeling like that's the way his voters would perceive it.
Yeah, but you fight the IRS. You don't fight the Special Olympics. You know, you just, there's a certain, I don't know. I mean, there's a way to win with that strategy. I mean, we've seen it. You know, they want to drown they want to make the government small enough to drown it in the bathtub. But you don't lump in the Special Olympics into that category and expect to get a political win. So that's just the level of derangement that I'm surprisingly running into more and more.
It's pretty shocking. All right, so let's just turn to the 2020 race at this point. Like, we're still waiting to see if Joe Biden drops in. There were a report in CNBC, maybe it was, I guess, last week, end of last week, beginning of this week, saying that big donors were basically telling Biden, "I can't, we can't bundle for you." Until later in the campaign. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the report, which was interesting. We had multiple reports saying that sources, although they've denied it, sources from the Biden campaign were floating Stacey Abrams as a VP. Yeah. She came out and shut that down in multiple areas in a way that suggested that she was a little bit annoyed by it, which I'm not, which, you know, I would be. He did not. As far as I know, he didn't go down and campaign for Stacey Abrams.
Right. This is
for a guy who's trying to cover for, you know, make up for some of his deficiencies. In some ways, this just exposes them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially consider his much of his history. The first thing was, when Stacey Abrams came out and basically shut that stuff down, it really let me know that nobody from that campaign actually had even contacted anyone from their campaign, right? And so the level of hubris that it takes to say, yeah, you know, that sister down in Georgia, I want her to be my VP without having a conversation about it whatsoever, it's political malpractice because you get egg on your face like you did this week. But it's also just like the height of arrogance, man. Like, I mean, what was he even thinking with that? But you also think about his baggage, his political baggage with black women in general. Like, it just wasn't a good move. And as politically savvy as people like to think he is, I think it also exposes that he really is not.
Well, now, wait a second. So here's the thing, though, is that I don't know that it was political malpractice under as much as it was as an awareness. I mean, it's a political malpractice in underestimating, I think, Stacey Abrams. In this way, I think Joe Biden could have gotten away with this 5 years ago or 10 years ago, or certainly back when he was running, you know, like on some level. He certainly got away with it with Elizabeth Warren in 2016. And I suspect that it didn't go down any differently with Elizabeth Warren, but I think he just thought, like, oh, she's not going to be in a position where she's going to knock me in any way or come out and sort of poo-poo this idea in any way, because she has now come out on record saying, look, Joe Biden and I met, but we did not discuss it during any of our meetings. And so she's putting it out there that, yeah, Biden did not contact me and I'm not interested in, you know, running for vice president.
For second place.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you put those things together and the absence of the sort of the platitudes that you would normally get. Joe Biden's a great guy. He was a great vice president. I would be honored to be, you know, working with Joe Biden and I appreciate the offer, but I am, you know, I don't run for second place. Like, that's another way you could do it. But she was basically signaling, like, you can't, I'm not yours to leverage with this community. And I think that is what, I think that is indicative of a liability that Joe Biden has, is that he is he's practicing politics from another era and is tone deaf in a myriad of ways that I think will come out during the course of this campaign.
Right. But it's the reason I say it's malpractice, political malpractice. And I hear everything that you just said. It worked previously for him. But, one thing, I'm married to a black woman. One thing you don't do is put words in black women's mouths, man. You don't you don't expect to get away with that. And the lay of the political land right now, I don't know, whoever told him that was a good idea, you know, it really backfired in a way, because she didn't pull any punches. She didn't worry about his ego. Like you said, you outlined it perfectly. She didn't butter him up and then let him down easily. No, she knocked the wind out of him on this. And so, you know, in the sense to me, it's like it's malpractice because he miscalculated in a very spectacular fashion. Now, how far reaching is it? How much baggage will it hurt him? You know, will it sandbag him for a long period of time? I don't know. But for that news cycle, it really just showed a level of hubris that, you're right, he could operate with in the past. So I guess he figured it worked for him in the past. He could try it again. He just tried it with the wrong one. And he really should have analyzed the situation better to realize who he was trying to just speak on behalf of. Like, say, hey, you know, Stacey, if anybody in this race, I would never try to put words in their mouth, it would be Stacey Abrams, because she's so prolific with her communication skills and her ability to just cut to the point and not really give two, you know, craps about what, you know, people's feelings being hurt. So that's what I'm saying when I say it was malpractice. I don't know how long it hurt them, but when she went on The View, yeah, that was pretty bad, a bad look for Joe Biden.
Yeah, it was. All right. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have plenty of time to talk about 2020 going forward. And this is where we're at. Kamala Harris came out with a couple of interesting proposals this week as well, although there was also a devastating story about the implications of her promoting a policy of arresting parents.
For truancy.
I can't off the top of my head remember where that story was, but it's an extensive story that really, I think, may hurt Kamala Harris. I mean, stories of a mother who has a child with sickle cell anemia, and she the kid couldn't go to school on some days, and they came and arrested her. That's not good. A good indication of of the implications of that type of a program. But we will get to that, I think, more in the future. We leave anything on the table for this week, Ben?
Nah, slow news week. I think we covered it all.
Yeah, just the drop of the report on the president. Exactly. Ben Dixon, the Benjamin Dixon Show. Thanks so much for your time today, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Sam. Take care.
All right. We're going to go to get Judy Gold in just a moment. But let's I want to do that. Let's do the Rush Limbaugh. This thing is nuts. It's so weird to see him now in some ways. Right. I mean, aside from the work that it appears that he's had done. And there's something that is anachronistic about Rush Limbaugh.
It's also weird to see his gold-plated microphone in 1080p.
Yeah,
it's usually on a webcam.
These assholes live forever.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Here is Rush Limbaugh on the Sean Hannity program.
Live from EIB, Southern Command Headquarters, the most listened to talk radio host in the history of the medium, radio talk show legend, Rush Limbaugh. Hey, Rush, how are you?
I am fabulous. It's great to be with you tonight.
You know, for those that never got you, with half my brain tied behind my back, in a lot of ways, you're like Trump. You say these things and people bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer. They have no sense of humor. I'm not sure if I got through. We get stuck on the thing. So you say controversial.
Can we go back now? Look, now Rush Limbaugh has a hearing problem. This is well documented, and there was a lot of speculation that it was a function of his OxyContin abuse from the early aughts. So he does have a device that some type of hearing aid. That helps him. So that's probably what's going on here. But it really does capture the essence of it. Like, you are like bubbling Alka-Seltzer. And then he just sort of stares.
He has a brain malfunction, as Trump used to say.
And all the Botox can't be helping either.
I think there's a lot of work being done there. A lot of work.
Seeped into his brain.
Let's play it back again.
With half my brain tied behind my got you. With half my brain tied behind my back. In a lot of ways, you're like Trump. You say these things and people bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer. They have no sense of humor.
What, you know what I think
I'm not sure
is,
if I got the
you know
got
what, it was no question. That's what's going on there, right? Go back. And so it was, I mean, look, this happens sometimes, I on this program, like I'll do a declarative statement and want the other person to pick up on it. But this is why it's, and understand that Limbaugh can't see Hannity. Hannity can see Limbaugh, but I doubt that the feed goes two ways. And so, I've been in these situations too, where you're in a remote camera, but it's still really funny. Let's watch it one more time. I'm sorry, folks.
The history of the medium, radio talk show legend, Rush Limbaugh. Hey, Rush, how are you?
I am fabulous. It's great to be with you tonight.
You know, for those that never got you, with half my brain tied behind my back, in a lot of ways, you're like Trump. You say these things and
so
people
he hears,
bubble
right?
and
smiling.
Fizz like Alka-Seltzer. They have no sense of humor.
There's no question. I'm not sure if I got through.
We get stuck on the thing. So you say controversial things also. And you're joking when you say half my brain tied behind my back.
Well, no, actually, I do. I split my skull open and I take half of it out and I put it behind my back.
That was a great joke. He's funny.
Does Professor Matt want to diagram Hannity sentences there?
No, it looked like Goodwill Hunting.
But they're all very, very excited about the Mueller report showing that, and I think maybe there's also a tremendous amount of relief because I wonder if they didn't think that it was quite possible that the president was so excited about getting his tower in Trump Tower in Russia that he would be offering things. Now, I still think that we probably have that dynamic in various areas, right? I mean, we've seen stuff like Ivanka Trump and some very dubious moves by the U.S. government in terms of like China after Ivanka gets certain copyrights and trademarks in China. So who knows if that dynamic is going on? It's a very tough dynamic to prove that quid pro quo, even in the context of we've had multiple instances. I think Tom DeLay was one. Others who have had who was the governor of Virginia, Bob
McDermott McDonald.
What was it, Bob? I can't. He and his wife were tried for bribery. No, they ultimately got off.
Is it Bob McDonald?
I think it was Bob McDonald, He ultimately got off because we don't really, it's not really a crime to get stuff for doing stuff. And he walked. So, you know, the quid pro quo is a very tough, is not with our politicians. It's highly problematic, I think, flaw in our law. But that is the... that is the reality of it. I don't know that there is, the bribery needs to be very, very, very explicit. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Judy Gold. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Let's just play like literally just 3 seconds or 5 seconds of our intro song, only because I don't want it to step on our guest today.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
All right, pause it. And that's enough. Ladies and gentlemen, Judy Gold. Judy, how are you?
Okay, I can't fucking... There's not enough hate in the universe to explain how I feel, okay? This fucking piece of shit.
Are you okay?
No, I can't take it. I can't fucking take anymore. I can't watch the news. I'm done. You know what? Let me tell you something. The thing is 300 fucking plus pages long, and he writes a fucking summary of 3.5 pages. The fucking asshole didn't even read it. Oh, I'm exonerated. You're not fucking exonerated. You're a fucking asshole. And all you do is he's going to fucking Mar-a-Lago on my dime to play fucking golf. Go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself.
I feel like you are really jeopardizing your opportunity to host the correspondence dinner.
Let me tell you something. Oh,
I would watch that.
Yeah. And that fucking son with his goddamn... first of all, he says bullshit. He said bullshit at his stupid Nazi rally last night. Okay? Then they said AOC... Who is he the fucking president of? Who is he the president of? His fucking sycophants? Fuck you, Lindsey Graham, you fucking bullshit artist. You fucking two-timing piece of shit. I can't take it. I just want him to have a fucking debate with Pete Buttigieg, a gay guy who can fucking put him in his goddamn place.
So wait, what did Lindsey Graham do that got you so teed up?
He exists.
I know, but
I don't even know where to start. Okay, he wants to shut up all his, you know, he wants to get rid of journalists and shut down MSNBC and shut down CNN when he can say whatever the fuck he wants. He can lie. He can make up bullshit stories. He can side with white supremacists and dictators. He can say whatever he wants. No one else can say anything. There's no freedom of speech for his critics. He fucking lies. Is that freedom of speech? I don't think so. That's freedom of psychosis. And the fact that these people align themselves with him.
That's a good line. Right?
They align, they like, they, you know, well, you know, it's not what he says, it's what he does. But then journalists who are trying to uncover the truth, they should be, they're the enemy of the people. Who the fuck, he likes Kim Jong-un? Fuck you! Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And fuck your kids.
Yes. Fuck you as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. You know that quote, yeah. Judy?
Yes.
Yes.
Done. Yes. Who is he the president of? Seriously, who is he the president of? Yes. Not the Democrats. Like, is he? He's an idiot. He's stupid. He walks around with that stupid long coat like he's the head of the mob. Oh, yeah, oh, with his thumbs up and his stupid fake teeth and his fucking orange hair. And then he calls shit pencil neck. Like, that's what you're fucking, that's how you respond to a true patriot who loves democracy and loves America? Pencil neck. Have you looked in the fucking mirror, fat fuck orange piece of shit?
I think today I'm just going to let you have all of the ones, Judy.
This is what the Mueller report thing felt like. It felt like, you know, I was on hold for a starring role on a TV show for 2 years. I'm on hold. every week I'm getting phone calls. They love you. They love you. You're the number one choice. You're still pinned up there. They're just casting the rest of it, but you're definitely their first choice for this part. This is going to change your career, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden I get a call. They went in another direction. That's exactly what that fucking Mueller report was.
Right. And so what happens now? Like, I mean, Michael is sitting here saying, this is why the coverage was so bad. And I agree. It gave you false hope.
Your agent called you.
How did that implicate your behavior in any way? Like, are you going to now, hold on, I'm talking. You can get on the mic if you want.
Sorry.
I mean, if you want to make this case.
Sorry.
But, obviously people's, let's put it this way. If you're aware of this investigation going on, I mean, your hopes are still pinned on this, right? Either way. I guess early on, if people were like, you got to wait, have patience. If your agent is saying, you know, you got to wait, have patience, you're still going to be thinking about that that starring role. But I mean, I'm just curious. What are the implications? Are you going out to beat up somebody now?
That
Judy is disappointed.
You know, but we haven't read the report. Like, the point is, if I had an assignment in English class and I had to read like a 350, 400 page book, and they're like, we need a summary of blah, 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 like, this is your final fucking exam on this fucking book, right? And you hand in 3.5 pages. And the teacher writes, okay, obviously you did not read this book. That's what it's like. It's like, first of all, who the fuck is this fucking Barr? This fat fucking, oh yeah, I got it. Oh yeah, I'm going to write a summary. Like, who the fuck does he think he is?
Well, I mean, to be fair, he did a pretty good job of cleaning up some of the loose ends with the Iran-Contra situation. He's well versed at how you roll these things out.
Okay, I don't give a shit. Okay, we're not talking about Iran-Contra right now. We're talking about a fucking dumb, idiot, stupid, filthy, disgusting excuse for a human being president of the United States and putting us in danger. All our allies hate us. He sides with dictators. It's so obvious. He lies. He's had 9,000 plus lies. Okay? And this, no, I want to read the fucking report. I want to fucking read it. I paid for the goddamn report, and I want to fucking read it.
I think it would be shocking if, at the very least, our representatives, it's quite possible there's stuff in there that's just too sensitive to share. But it would be shocking if Congress was not allowed to see the unredacted report. I mean, that would be just absolutely shocking.
Right, right. It's not a democracy. It's not a democracy.
I would hope that, that there's a universality that
what did Bernie
everyone
say?
Should see.
What I want to see the whole damn report.
Yes.
That was the first thing he said.
They had to beep him.
Not a summary.
Wait, they had to bleep.
They beeped Bernie because he said,
yeah,
I want to
like,
read
they
the whole.
I want to see the whole motherfucking cocksucking report.
Yeah, he said, I want to read the motherfucker. All of it.
No, he didn't.
No, he said damn and they beeped him, but it sounded good.
He said damn, they beeped him, but fuckface can get on stage in Michigan and say bullshit.
True.
And,
true.
And they can say AOC sucks, but that doesn't get bleeped.
Bernie gets bleeped for saying damn, and Donald Trump's face
damn,
is on television without
damn.
Being obscured.
Yeah, seems a little anti-Semitic to me, don't you think?
Say that again, I didn't hear.
Seems a little anti-Semitic, no?
Oh,
censoring the Jew?
Fucking piece of shit. Honestly, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's like I can't watch the news because I can't deal. It's like I unfollowed Donald Trump Jr. because he is just the biggest scumbag. that ever
Why were you following him?
Earth.
I feel like you should have like a medical professional tell you that you're not allowed to do that. Like, I'm genuinely worried about like your blood pressure to follow Donald Trump Jr.
Oh, my mother used to say that too.
Well,
Judith, you're getting your blood. Why are you getting your blood pressure up? I mean, seriously, like, it's because I can't believe that I live in the fucking world. Like, this is America. Like, this is the world my kids are going to grow up in. Like, you're going to fucking put pipelines into like the just ruin the fucking earth. You're going to say there's no climate change. What the fuck? Seriously, this is we fought for, you know, years for equality and civil rights and dignity of human, and this fucking undignified, dumb, orange, fucking everything that everyone hates about America, fucking blob of fat McDonald's fucking fries is president of the fucking United States. Yes.
You know, I think it was, I don't know if it was like the Prime Minister of Australia. Somebody said something to the effect like, America is really, you know, we got to be careful of this country. They elected him once. They could elect him again. And I think like the idea is that, you know, I think Donald Trump is symptomatic of a real problem with the country that I think is, you know, is coming to a head. And I'm quite convinced that I think the presidency of Barack Obama, aside from his, you know, deficiencies as a president from those of us, you know, have a critique of him from the left. But I think just the fact that he was black drove a significant portion of the country. I don't know what it was, 15, 20, 25%, completely insane, completely insane.
Right. White supremacists. This country is full of white supremacists, religious zealots. You know, it's unbelievable that, you know, they can take a temper tantrum to the point of ruining this country for all the people who made this country. I don't want to say great because I hate them.
So have you been, you know, going out doing shows? Like, I just like, how do you?
Well, I'm writing a book, but yes, I have been out doing shows, and, you know, I have to preface my thoughts on this fuckface by saying, you know, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about political leaning. I'm talking about this quote unquote person that he, like, character doesn't matter. Like, since when does character not matter?
I mean, certainly there was a lot of people who I think voted for Donald Trump who were singing a slightly different tune 10-15 years ago, right? I mean, like, you know, that and you know, it was one thing to say like, well, Barack Obama was just broadly speaking, like I say, I had some issues with his politics, but as a human being, seems to be like a far better example of the species than Donald Trump. I mean,
if
aliens were to come down from wherever it was, and we had to sort of say, like, make our case for you shouldn't kill all humans, I would certainly want to push Obama out there before I push Trump out there.
Oh, so now I got to save the devils again. Save them from the space rays. Fuck that.
I understand. I just, you know, I never thought, like, even when I disliked the president, you know, politics and it was never that they weren't dumb. I mean, yeah, well, some of them were dumb, like George Bush Jr. or whatever his fucking name, George W. I mean, but it's like a fucking toddler. It really is. It's like, oh, you don't like me? Fuck you, Fatso. Like, that is so immature. He's so mentally ill. He's a narcissist. say, no man has done more for Puerto Rico than I mean, are you? He's fucking crazy.
That comment actually made me as mad as Judy. That is right. So disgusting for him to say that specifically right. about Puerto Rico, which is a colony to begin with. And that is where I think we need to look more systemically. But this motherfucker, they were out of power for 11 months and he went and threw toilet paper at them like he was shooting baskets. And now they're shut. There's a conflict in the Senate about the amount of aid that goes to Puerto Rico while the food stamps are getting cut. That is disgusting.
1.5 million people.
Disgusting.
Losing nutrition support.
1.5 million Puerto Ricans.
Yes.
And we already have them indebted to us paying off vulture funds. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want to sidetrack us, but that is so disgusting.
Well, here he is. Now, Judy, just calm down for a second. We're going to play this audio of Donald Trump praising his own work in Puerto Rico.
I've taken better care of Puerto Rico than any man ever.
Oh, my God. What a lunatic.
I think he's talking about a whorehouse that he went
to? Any man ever.
That is so disgusting.
Is he mistaking Puerto Rico, the place, for perhaps a person that he refers to as Puerto Rico?
Yeah, right.
I paid for all the procedures.
Where are my Puerto Ricans? Where am I? There's my Puerto Rican.
Yeah, where are my Puerto Rican? Oh, there's my Puerto Rican. There, right there. There's my Puerto Rican.
No,
fuck
man,
you,
that's
you
real.
Fuck. And what about sick. Betsy DeVos? I mean, what the fuck? She is a vapid fucking, like, her face. Like, her face could talk. That's what it would say.
I just feel like she's like a sandworm underneath. Like I said the other day, she always looks like she's about to unhinge her jaw and swallow a child whole.
Right. Fucking gross. They're all horrible. And now he's putting people on the board of the Kennedy Center on, like, Mike Huckabee?
Who? He put Mike.
Deciding who is getting a Kennedy Center.
He put John Voight on the. Oh my.
Yes!
God.
Voight, yep.
You know what's amazing is that they clearly. The Kennedy Center, when they set up the Kennedy Center, no one involved in that could have ever contemplated that this type of guy would be they're like, well, we'll let the president choose. Like, you know, like,
right.
We're only going to get the best people, like the most esteemed people, best people ever. That's wow.
And he's dumb. Like, he's so dumb. Like, he's just a dumb. He's so fucking dumb.
For real.
I mean, just, like, he's dumb. Like, he doesn't know anything about how the government works. He doesn't read. I mean, it's, oh my God. Sorry.
So what do you have planned for the spring, Judy?
You know, I'm doing lots of shows, but I have a book that I have to finish.
What is the book on? What is the book?
Hopefully.
Can you give us a teaser?
The book is on, I'll give you a little bit, but it's on freedom of speech.
Really? Moving into Dave Rubin's territory.
And who, say that again?
Don't insult Judy
into Dave Rubin's territory.
No, I'm not moving into his territory, believe me.
What is the book? I mean,
it's from a comedian's perspective.
Interesting.
And it's, you know, yeah, it is very interesting because, you know, we can't tell jokes. Like, we can't go in a club and tell a joke because it might offend someone, and yet this fucking piece of shit can stand there and say whatever the fuck he wants, and he's supposed to represent us in the world? No.
I'm stoked to read this book.
I am, too. When is this coming out?
Book. It's coming out in October, and it won't be coming out if I don't fucking finish.
All
it's
right,
so
well,
hard to write. It's so, you guys have written books.
It was the most excruciating thing that I've done. Like, I, you know,
right.
I, at least when I would write scripts, I could say,
right,
okay,
right.
I'm going to have a chance to execute this. Like, this is not,
right.
You know, I mean, for me, writing a script was always like just a means. It was never an end.
Right.
And when
right.
I co-wrote the book with Stephen Sherrill, and we took alternate chapters, or I don't know if how it worked out, but
right.
we took about half each. And I have to say, like, when I was done writing that book, I felt so empty. Like, I was like, ugh. You know, because usually I write the script and I'm like excited about shooting it or seeing, you know, or,
right.
you know,
right,
directing
right.
it or
like
acting
here.
In it. And
yeah.
now it's just like, ugh, it's just sitting there and it's
right.
dead.
She needs a pep talk, Sam.
Oh, no.
It's very rewarding and it
but,
will make a big influence on the culture.
But
okay, thank
once
you.
It goes out the door, Judy, then what happened is it went and like became almost worth like maybe 95 cents.
Person. Oh, I'm so excited.
You know, I do like the juxtaposition.
The book
though.
Tour was fun. The book tour was super fun. And you're going to love the book tour.
I'm working on a book proposal myself, so I am listening very intently.
But
to
you're
how
yeah.
empty
you're,
I'm gonna
but
feel.
You're a writer. You write these. You write.
I know.
Articles.
I'm doing it because I miss writing, and it's like the only way I could think of to get back to it.
I'm doing my book as a script. It's a remaking of The Sopranos through the IDW, and I'm looking forward to the part where Sam Harris clips Dave Rubin. So
that would
fun.
Actually be
yeah. It's another project, actually.
Well,
who do you
so,
flip?
Are you
Judy?
Friends,
what's the
are you
name?
Friends with Dave?
All right, no.
no.
So, Judy, no,
okay.
not at all.
God.
What is the
Jesus?
That
was
ever run
that
into
was
that
legitimately
game?
Insulting.
Did you
we
ever
are going
to
have on an analogous person in a bit?
Well, listen, we got to jump.
Yeah.
In, but what is the name of the book?
We are kind of figuring that out.
Okay, fair enough. But this is exciting.
But don't worry, it'll be politically incorrect.
This is
okay.
You don't say.
That's my Bill Maher impression.
With, yes, I can say that, you know, but there's other subtitles that are also important.
I
so,
like the juxtaposition
yeah.
of like people getting like freaked out about every joke or whatever and being way over uptight with like a president who literally is like,
right.
did you see that guy who has muscular dystrophy? Check out this impression. It's a good juxtaposition.
Right.
Pencil neck.
No, pencil neck was funny.
I got the feeling that he was trying to sort of like, it was like a veiled, like it was a euphemism for.
That was a
like,
it was
like
a euphemism for other things.
For other things. Not so big. Small hands.
It'd be funny if Obama called Trey Gowdy like fish face. Like, oh, fish face. Benghazi, fish face.
God. All right, Judy.
Fish face talking again. Bad committee.
Judy, as always, incredibly cathartic to talk to you. Feel much better
Ooh,
about things.
God, I can't believe I just, I needed to unleash. So I'm very, very happy today with the day you wanted, you know, me to appear on your show.
You were the
so,
first person
thank
I thought
you.
Of.
Thank
you,
thank
Judy.
You, ladies
All right,
and
we'll
gentlemen.
Talk to you soon. Love you, Judy. Bye.
All right. Love you. Bye.
Judy Gold, ladies and gentlemen. When I texted her and I said, hey, can you do Friday? She just wrote back, yes, all caps. I effing hate that. Effing. It was, I knew she was ready. I knew she was ready. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Michael Tracy about the Mueller report and or the summation or just the entire investigation and what he found problematic about it. We'll be right back after
Keep
this.
My name out your mentions.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. We should say, earlier this morning when I got into the office, we were doing our prep, and I got tweeted at by our next person on the phone to the effect of, will I apologize for having Marcy Wheeler on the program? On her coverage of the Mueller investigation writ large. In fact, let's read it right here. It's, hey, Sam Seder, are you going to apologize for repeatedly hosting Marcy Wheeler, an FBI cooperator and proven fabulist, the Judith Miller of the Trump-Russia fiasco, on your show for uncritical interviews, thereby deceiving your audience and helping to perpetuate a... I don't know if that was spelled right, but a giant fraud. And the answer is no,
perpetrate,
but I want...
Perpetrate a fraud, not perpetuate.
Oh, okay. Perpetrate a fraud, a giant fraud. And well, the answer is no, Michael. Welcome to the show. But I am interested in talking to you about this because I am somewhat baffled by... some of the critique and the celebration or what it's about on your part. So let's just start with this so that we have some basic sort of understanding of where we both stand on this. Do you agree that like, you know, Glenn Greenwald, who also is a big has a similar critique as yours and Matt Taibbi, that there should have been an investigation launched by with Robert Mueller?
Well, first of all, Sam, I genuinely appreciate you having me on because I feel like this is an extraordinarily important topic and needs to be discussed rationally by people of good faith. So thank you, you know, sincerely. I do want to get to that, but I want to just explain that tweet first because I know it's an incendiary charge.
We'll get to the tweet, but let's start with just the underlying reality.
But the tweet was the whole impetus for this conversation, right?
Well, no, the whole impetus of the conversation is that I've been interested in having having a broader conversation about this, and you were one of those people, and it popped up. I mean, to be honest, you wouldn't be the first person I would have chosen who to represent this. I'm just being honest, but it just, you know, fate would have it. But before we get to a third order or fourth order thing in terms of like, you know, you want to talk about Marcy's credibility. I just want to know the underlying reason for this conversation is the Mueller investigation. So let's just start. Do you think, because if you think there was no reason for that investigation, then people are going to understand at least where you're coming from here. And I'm just curious if you think that there was a reason to have the investigation of the special counsel.
Well, the special counsel investigation we now know was launched on false pretenses because the impetus for the investigation
at the time. Let's put it this way: at the time,
can I complete the thought? Can I complete
sure.
the thought? The impetus for the investigation, according to all the Democrats who heralded Robert Mueller as this valiant savior.
The Democrats did not appoint Robert Mueller.
But they heralded his appointment.
Okay, but...
And they touted him vociferously as the person who is going to hold Trump accountable for his purported conspiratorial relationship with Putin that came to be characterized as collusion. That was the whole reason why Democrats were so adamant that this investigation had
to
be launched.
Who appointed Robert Mueller?
Who appointed Robert Mueller? Rod Rosenstein. I don't absolve Rod Rosenstein at all. I don't absolve any of these security state officials that Democrats and MSNBC decided that they were in love with over the past 2.5 years because they were convenient foils for Donald Trump. I think it's a total journalistic disgrace.
Do you think
like John Brennan
the Mueller,
hired by MSNBC?
Michael, listen, this is a very easy question for us to have to start this. Okay?
Go ahead.
The question is, did you think at the time of the investigation, and if it's a different answer from did and do, you can tell me. But did you think it was appropriate to have this to launch this investigation? And if you want to say, do you now, in retrospect, you want to have a different opinion, that's fine, too.
This is not a gotcha question. This is a question to find out if the underlying thing was a valid thing to have happen.
Sure. I think the underlying thing has now been proven to be a fraud, and it was apparent to me from the very outset. So going back to July of 2016, that it was a fraud.
Okay.
You could see the narrative congeal in real time. Sam, you got to let me complete a thought.
Well, you're not answering the question. You're not answering the question, Michael. This is a very easy question. Because when Glenn was asked this question, when Matt is asked this question, they can answer it without giving an extended. This is a very easy question.
But it's a complicated subject, so I'm giving a little lead up before I fully answer the question, which I guarantee you I will. Now, I always believed that maximum government transparency is optimal. But I was never cheerleading for Robert Mueller because I understood that the entire investigation was predicated on a fraud. Therefore, I didn't think it would uncover anything that related to its core mandate, which was the Trump-Russia conspiracy. So, no, I wasn't going around screaming and chanting and marching in the streets like a lot of liberals and Democrats for Robert Mueller and, like, touting him as this folk hero.
Right.
So, no, I was never an advocate for the investigation, but I didn't oppose it. I was agnostic about the investigation.
Okay. So I'm not asking if you cheerleaded for the investigation. I'm not asking if you marched against the investigation. You are a journalist. You are a person who obviously has opinions. Did you think it was appropriate to have the investigation? I mean, if you thought it was a complete and total fraud, you must have been against the investigation from the very beginning, before it was even launched.
Well, I wasn't against the investigation because I always thought that it had the potential to implicate various Trump apparatchiks and, you know, crooks that he surrounds himself with in crimes that are ancillary or unrelated to the core conspiracy charge. So if somebody like Manafort or, you know, Roger Stone or somebody got wrapped up in a criminal indictment that stemmed from the original special counsel investigation, I wasn't going to complain about that. I want people who are in positions of power.
That's
to be
what happened.
Like Manafort.
Correct. Right.
That's what happened. But the investigation also sparked a tidal wave of conspiratorial frenzy.
Okay,
that
but Michael, you are giving me an answer about retrospect. If you want to say in retrospect, I regret that I thought there should be an investigation, or in retrospect, I was against this from the very beginning. That's a perfectly suitable answer, but I'm just trying to get us on some type of ground of footing. I'm just basically like, are we both on the same, you know, planet here? Because I can answer this question regardless of what I thought happened after the investigation. I do believe there should have been an investigation. There clearly was an intelligence investigation, and when he fired Comey, the head of the FBI, and went on and said, I fired him because of this investigation, I clearly thought there should be an investigation. Now, you're telling me you had no opinion. You were agnostic as to whether the president of the United States should be investigated at any time. You were completely agnostic as to it.
I wanted Trump to be held to account and investigated for his actual offenses and the many harms.
And you knew what these offenses were.
And this was not one of them.
You knew his offenses were what?
By Democrats and MSNBC.
Michael, listen, I get it. Everybody knows that you have a problem with Democrats and MSNBC. I have some similar critiques, but I'm just trying to get at what you knew before this.
Have you raised those critiques with colleagues ever? What have they said? Have they acknowledged their complicity in this crime?
I'm sorry, Michael. Do you think there's some type of commissary I hang out at MSNBC?
I don't know. You've been a contributor, haven't you?
Yeah, I show up and I go on these shows.
You're friendly with the hosts and such, correct?
I am friendly with the hosts, yes.
Okay, have you pressed them on their complicity in this overwhelmingly, staggeringly, mind-bogglingly fraudulent enterprise that they were central actors in promulgating?
Sometimes
I mean, I don't know that I would have put it that way, but listen.
Okay, so
I have been very vocal on this show about the excesses of this, but I'm trying to ask you a simple question that you seem to be reluctant to answer for some ungodly reason.
What is the question, Sam? I'm happy to answer it.
What did you know about Donald Trump's offenses before the investigation in July? What did you know, and how did you know this?
I knew that there was no rational basis for even postulating that there could have feasibly been a Trump-Russia conspiracy, which is what precipitated the investigation. Again, I'm not crying about the fact that other offenses got uncovered incidental to that. But I wasn't also...
Were you aware that there was...
I knew it would spawn this paranoid frenzy that was going to overtake the Democratic Party and lots of liberal activists and cause real damage to the body politic.
So, okay. So you're convinced that there's been a real damage to the body politic. Now, were you aware... were you aware that the Russians were behind the hacking into the emails dump and, you know, what they did on social media? Without any question as to what implications it had on the election, because you and I have no idea what that was. I suspect it wasn't a dramatic impact on the election, although obviously the emails were quite problematic for the Clinton campaign. But nevertheless, I happen to think there's probably a dozen things that were but-fors in terms of her loss. But were you aware of that? And do you acknowledge that that is the truth?
Well, my attitude towards those emails was that they uncovered genuine corruption and malfeasance.
I understand that, but that's not what I asked you.
Because the resignation of the entire Democratic National Committee.
That is not what I asked you.
Revealed that Bernie Sanders got screwed out of the Democratic primary.
That's not what I asked you.
Michael,
why are you being so evasive? Why are you being so fucking evasive here? I invited you on the show because you wanted to malign one of my guests and cry about my inviting someone on my show. And I'm asking you some basic questions. And already 10 minutes into this, you won't even answer the basic question. Do you believe the report that you now tout in its saying that the Russians were interfering in the election by hacking into Hillary Clinton's emails and by their shenanigans on social media? Do you think that is true? Yes or no? Did you know that in July?
I unequivocally reject this notion that election interference, so we're talking about social media posts on Facebook,
you
such as memes
coward.
Of Bernie Sanders, cartoons.
You coward. Answer my question,
and
not some
emails.
Question in your head.
I agree that all those things have been alleged to being carried out by the Russian government, and I agree that it's
Do you agree that
the
Barr
that
memo that you are saying exonerates Donald Trump? Do you agree that letter, at least, says that they did that?
Yes, that letter does say that, of course.
Okay, so you don't believe that part, but you believe the other part.
Yes.
You think the Barr memo is controlling on the things that you're interested in proving, but not the things that you're not interested in proving?
The thing I'm interested in illustrating is the reason
why... No, not
why
illustrating. Michael, you're being so evasive here. It's pathetic.
Yes,
you know what? Honestly, listen. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to invite somebody else on here who has some integrity to talk about this, who shares very similar positions
as
yours.
I'm answering your questions. You're interrupting me after 30 seconds.
Because these are simple subject. Yes or no questions. So that we can actually have a conversation, and you're dragging this out by 14 minutes.
What's the yes or no question? Ask it again, and I guarantee I'll answer it. I've been trying to answer you as honestly as possible.
The first one is: should there have been an investigation? You claim you were agnostic about that. Fine,
right.
That's your answer. If people want to buy that, that's your answer. Do you believe that the Russians hacked into the emails and that they had social media bots and whatnot?
Can you give me 30 seconds to answer the question? I promise I will.
You got 30
seconds.
Up
until July of 2018, there was no evidence furnished by any law enforcement authority that the Russians hacked the DNC emails. Then Robert Mueller did issue an indictment that alleged that Russian intelligence actors were responsible for the DNC hack. I accept that constitutes evidence. Is it dispositive, 100% definitive evidence? No, but it's evidence, and I'm willing to grant that there's a preponderance of likelihood that, yes, the Russians did hack those DNC emails, and, yes, that they were responsible for some social media hijinks. But the idea that those memes on Facebook and these shit posts on Twitter...
We don't need to debate that because I agree with you. We don't need to debate that because I agree with you. Now, good.
Clearly said this from the day one.
So, okay. So now we agree that the investigation uncovered the preponderance of the evidence, any qualification you want to do that, but the on balance, the investigation proved things to you or at least led you to believe things that you didn't know back in July of 2016, right? So we can see that even though in July of 2016, when you did not believe the Russians were involved in any of that, your assessment as to whether there could have been some type of coordination with the Trump campaign in that regard would have been based upon a lack of an awareness that the Russians had done anything. So it's conceivable at that point. But I'm going to grant you that despite the fact that you were agnostic about this and your scrutiny, so that you were agnostic as to whether the existence of the investigation should have happened. And I will also add that, like I said, some of the biggest critics of this investigation as to how the behavior of the Democrats and the journalists around it have behaved believe that the investigation was justified. So I personally believe that the investigation was justified. And now we can at least go forward and talk about the implications of me having somebody on the show who is read into this stuff and started out as a skeptic herself, but because of firsthand knowledge that she had of one of the potential players in this this whole that was caught up in the investigation, or at least peripheral to it, came on my show three times after that to discuss the investigation. And you can tell me why I need to apologize to that for my audience.
Great. Here's why. So I agree 100% with Matt Taibbi when he says in his recently published piece, which I'm sure you're aware of, that the scale of the media error as it relates to Trump-Russia matches or exceeds the scale of the media error as it relates to Iraq/WMDs, not in the sense that they cause comparable levels of death and destruction, because obviously Iraq cannot feasibly be surpassed in that arena, but because of the all-consuming, deluded behavior that totally overtook huge, huge swaths of the media to the point that there's now this kind of Russia skeptics caucus in media that includes like me, Greenwald, Taibbi, Aaron Maté at The Nation, et cetera, because there were so few of us who were offering a countervailing perspective. And thankfully, we have gotten some recognition over the past couple of days, and I'm gratified by that. I don't want to gloat. I don't want to celebrate because it's actually a very depressing topic.
Michael, that's all you've been doing.
And I despair.
That's all you've been doing. But be that as it may. Okay.
I've been trying to impose accountability, but let me get to Marcy Wheeler, okay?
Well,
Judith Miller is known primarily as the New York Times reporter who credulously repeated the information that was fed to her by government sources pertaining to aluminum tubes. Remember that, which was then
Yes, I remember it quite well.
Right.
Yes.
But you have some young listeners and viewers, Sam, so I'm just refreshing their memory. And so that's what she's primarily known for, but she's also known for going to prison, or rather jail, for 85 days because she refused to give up a source to law enforcement authorities. So Judith Miller is seen as a total journalistic disgrace on reasonable grounds, but at the same time, she refused to commit the mortal sin of journalism, which is that you can't give up your sources to the police, or the cops, or the FBI. Whereas Marcy Wheeler, who's now running around pretending like she's a journalist, was covering the
Michael, listen.
Can you let me finish the thought?
No, I'm not going to let you sit here and malign in that way, all right? Nobody was going to bring up you accusing Maxine Waters, an old lady, of assaulting you, all right? But if you want to play that game, we can play that game.
That's a total lie. That's an absolute lie, and I can prove it. Absolutely false.
We got her on speed dial, bro.
So,
by the way, Max, Sam, let me just address that because you really petulantly brought up something that's totally unrelated.
No, I brought it up because of your petulance.
Interaction that I had with a member of Congress because I was asking her about her deranged conspiratorial Russia comments. And in the heat of the moment, I didn't phrase a tweet as accurately as I could have. But the idea that I alleged assault or violence is absolutely false, and I would hope you would retract that. I can show you the initial tweets if you really want to look at them.
Yeah, well, you show me the tweets, and then I'll retract it.
Okay. Perfect.
So, all right. So you have an issue. You're comparing Marcy Wheeler to Judith Miller, who was protecting members of the Bush administration who have perpetrated a fraud
on the United States with the purpose of invading, of getting the country to rally around the invading and occupation of a country which led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people by DOD accounting. Millions of people. You're telling me that this is a that she plays a similar role in this because she, not at the behest of the FBI, not at the behest of a government official, felt that she was involved in this investigation in some way because of information that she had received from someone she felt was playing her. That's the that is the equation you want to make. Now, Judith Miller.
Remember what my qualification was. It was not that the destruction wrought or the death cause was comparable. It was the media error. This is Matt Taibbi's point.
No, I'm talking about Judith Miller. I'm talking about Judith Miller's role in.
Right.
And so when she lied for Scooter Libby and for Dick Cheney, she knew that she was opening up a portal to a war. And so you're suggesting to me, followed
the guidelines of any ethical journalist, which is you don't give up your sources to the police. Marcy Wheeler not only gave up her sources voluntarily, so she wasn't in some kind of court proceeding like Judith Miller was. Marcy Wheeler decided, I'm going to
Judith Miller was protecting people who ultimately had to be pardoned by a president. Or have his sentence commuted by a president who perpetrated this lie. The analogy here is so bizarre, Michael. But let's get to this. But since you brought it up, because I wasn't going to have you defend this analogy because it wasn't yours. But since you did, I'm very curious as to how you might defend this analogy. Because to me, this whole to the extent that there was anything there is a malfeasance by the press, it's far more like the O.J. Simpson trial to me, which was completely overblown and proceeded as if, every day they were camped out there. A lot of people made their careers off of it. And I found the whole thing to be a horrible exercise on the behalf of the media. But at the end of the day, what was the stakes? Let me ask you this. Let's say MSNBC functioned as what media outlet would you like? Let's say they functioned like because you don't expect that the cable news is not going to cover an investigation of the president, right?
I would grant that cable news would not use their news gathering operations with members of the security state like John Brennan and James Clapper. Yeah, I would
okay. All right, but you would
maybe
expect
you have a different set of expectations.
No, my expectation is that they would cover it. I have no problem. But let's do this scenario where MSNBC.
You have a problem with MSNBC hiring John Brennan, the former director of the CIA?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Then we agree.
Okay. But I'm asking you, I'm trying to find out what the baseline is here, and I want to find out what the implications of this. Because if you're going to compare it to weapons of mass destruction, which led to the deaths and destruction of hundreds of thousands of lives, because that's the stakes, right? That's the stakes. Because I want to know what the stakes are here, and if they're even remotely comparable. Because the O.J. Simpson thing is a far more apt analogy, because the stakes at the end of the day were, you know what? The body politic is less informed, that people have exploited this for making a lot of money and a name for themselves and whatnot. And so I want to know how you can justify, like, what would have happened in the world? What would be different today if MSNBC hadn't hired those people that we don't think they should have hired? If they had just covered, because obviously they've got to cover it a little bit. It's an investigation of the president. And they've got to cover when, Mike Flynn, it turns out, was looking to kidnap somebody for Turkey. Or when we have indictments that we both agree seem to be valid of operatives from Russia. And I have a problem with the United States interfering in elections. And I have a problem with anybody interfering with ours. And I probably talk more about the former than I do the latter, frankly. But assuming MSNBC just covered the investigation in a completely non-cheerleading way, what would be different today?
The rendering of the stakes that I agree with is the one that's been put forward time after time by Glenn Greenwald Matt Taibbi, Max Blumenthal, other principled non-supporters of Trump who have been vehement.
What would be different today?
And I'm telling you what the stakes are. Now, I said from the outset that it's not comparable in terms of the death and destruction wrought. Obviously, the invasion of Iraq was one of the greatest crimes the U.S. government has ever committed. However, in terms of media failure and the production of an all-consuming frenzy that totally dominated American politics and media for approaching 3 years, and it required all kinds of self-delusion, elevated all kinds of cranks and morons and losers into positions of prominence in the media and attributed them with unearned influence. Yes, I think that there are
unearned influence to do
magnitude
what?
In terms of real world scopes. I mean, I can tell you the Bulletin of Atomic Science, Scientists, which has the doomsday clock. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Minutes to midnight in terms of like when civilization is going to be destroyed. You know, so they have all kinds of factors that they incorporate when they make the judgment as to where, you know, at what point the clock should be set. And in 2018, the clock was closest to midnight as it has ever been. And one of the reasons was, you know, in addition to climate change, other contributing factors, one was geopolitical tension. And this narrative, which has totally consumed American politics for almost 3 years, has ratcheted up geopolitical
tension. You don't think that Donald Trump scrapping a nuclear agreement that had been in place for decades led to that more than what Rachel Maddow was saying about Russia?
Oh, of course that was a factor. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Where but are this assessment factor, can you point my listeners to? Where can you point my listeners to? Where can you point my listeners to where they can go find out just how much the hyping of the investigation, not the investigation itself, right? Because all those people you cited, but for you being agnostic, all thought it was perfectly legitimate to have that investigation. So where can you point me to where these this clock, and I can tell my listeners, they can go see this link, where the hyping of the investigation led to us being that much closer to a nuclear destruction?
Just type, your listeners can type doomsday clock into Google and they can find it.
And they can find,
and they
can assess how much of the hyping of that investigation led.
I don't know that the process undertaken by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists actually, you know, specifically quantifies
you've had the ability to see deeply into things before they're investigated. So I presume that you did. Okay, so the stakes are that the doomsday clock may, because we don't know, as you've just said, may have been raised. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's
okay.
A significant considering it
on your ledger.
The total destruction of human civilization.
In your ledger. Okay. And that's it? Or is there more?
More in terms of the stakes?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in terms of the...
The investigation goes on. MSNBC does not hire people who I would have preferred they did not hire.
No, they should not.
This is the alternate universe. And the investigation's not hyped. There's no cheerleaders. Politicians don't use this investigation as a political cudgel in any way, because we know that politicians would never do that and should never do that. And so we have in your favor the possibility that sandwiched in between the end of a massive nuclear proliferation agreement being scrapped and a president who wanted to pull out of NATO and alliances changing the scrapping of the Iran deal, that it could have been not just the investigation, but the hype of the investigation could have led the atomic clock to get closer to midnight. I've put that in your ledger. What else?
Well, let me give you another stake.
What else would be different?
This is really significant.
Okay.
One stake that I think pertains directly to this entire disgusting ordeal is that the reputation of the media has been obliterated. Matt Taibbi very cogently makes this point in the piece that I hope you've read. He outlines the mountainous pile of errors and outright fraud, in some cases, retractions.
Now, wait a second. This is your case, too. Let's just be clear, because this is your case, right? This is the case you're making.
It's my case.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, in my case. But in that piece, because I'm just using that piece as a reference point, and I've compiled errors of my own in the past. But the way that the media has totally discredited itself, I think, is a danger for the country, because with a president that has authoritarian tendencies like Donald Trump, you need a measured and rational and evidence-based opposition. I wrote about this in Fortune magazine yesterday. You need an opposition that can actually counterbalance his worst tendencies. But what this opposition did to Trump, so this kind of sick confluence between the liberal media and Democrats touting this conspiratorial fairy tale, what they did was encourage his worst impulses. So they criticized him when he engaged in diplomatic overtures with this nuclear armed state, and said that, oh, any kind of vague sign of friendliness toward Putin is proof that he's colluding with Putin. So what did Trump do? He tore up the INF treaty, and which may spur a nuclear arms race. Again, I'm not absolving Trump himself of any culpability in this. He's the president, and I pin blame on him for sure. And what he bombed Russia's chief client state repeatedly in the Middle East, Syria. He's attempting to overthrow the government of Venezuela, and in part citing as rationale the fact that Russia needs to be driven out of Venezuela, which is their chief ally in the Western Hemisphere. He sent lethal arms to Ukraine in contradiction with his own campaign rhetoric. The list goes on. So this climate that has been fostered.
Now, wait a second.
By people like Adam Schiff.
Okay, hold on for one second. Let me just listen. I know.
You created a set of perverse incentives.
Okay.
That, yes, increase geopolitical hostilities and endanger the American public.
So these people who were against him tearing up that treaty, he did it because ostensibly it was going to look like it was him being tough with Russia, right? Although I think there you will find people who would argue that it was probably Michael, I'm going through your list. I'm going through your list. Okay?
Go ahead.
Our Syria policy, I'm sure you're aware of, right, that the Obama administration was arming through the CIA, was arming right. people in Syria, right? And to the extent that Trump was bombing in Syria, there's no evidence, it seems to me, that it was in some way not helpful to maintaining Assad in power. Which is, and frankly, look, I don't think we should have been involved there since day one. But
do you think
Assad
was really happy about his airfield being bombed?
I think that Assad was perfectly fine with just that airfield being bombed. Yes, they rebuilt it in 2 days.
And, oh, okay. So I'm sure he sent Trump a thank you note for that.
Well, I think things are a little bit more sophisticated than that, Michael. But if you want to believe that, that's fine. And it's not clear to me that the tearing up of the nuclear proliferation deal doesn't enhance Putin's strength to the extent you're saying. The Venezuela thing has been on the agenda of people like John Bolton for a long time, not just sure. John Bolton, but has been out there in Republican circles for a long time. You may recall Hugo Chavez was also demonized for a long time. Yep. But if you want to think that that is somehow a function of his feeling like he needs to stand up to Russia, which I don't know that the American public was terribly savvy as to the a Russian-Venezuelan relationship, then that's certainly your prerogative. But all of those media stories that you're talking about, the long list, if you ever went to emptywheel.net, which is Marcy Wheeler's site,
you will see
that she was way out ahead of I don't know what you've written about it, but others on saying the Steele dossier was more than likely a complete farce. She was
way out ahead in asserting that she possessed secret evidence that she handed over to the FBI that was going to prove that there was a Trump-Russia conspiracy. Now, Mueller has issued his findings, and there is no such conspiracy. And Marcy's still being cryptic and evasive when asked what it was that she actually turned over to the FBI. She still won't give a straight answer on
that. I think that investigation, there's still elements of that investigation. Well, we got to see the report, really, until we assess that, right? Because you can say that what happened did not reach the level of criminality that would have afforded an indictment. But you can't say that what she is claiming didn't happen. You can say assessment of the level of evidence for criminality was wrong, and it might have been, and it appears right. to be. But you cannot say that what she said and claimed happened didn't happen.
Oh, I'm sure something happened to her. The critical detail was always how she portrayed it and what she did with it journalistically. She portrayed it as smoking gun evidence in a bombshell that was going to be, you know, the key that opens the door to this grand Russia collusion conspiracy, and Mueller totally obliterated that postulation.
But you don't know what Mueller said. All you've seen is one sentence of what Mueller said. So stop characterizing Mueller. You're characterizing the Barr memo.
Exactly what Mueller said, which was that there was no Trump-Russia conspiracy, and that's exactly what Marcy said would be established by this evidence that she claimed that she possessed and handed over to the FBI in this kind of extraordinary
I think
you would condemn it under circumstances.
I think that we're going to have to get an accounting at one point as to where that evidence fits in, but it seems far too early before we get that. And for you to claim that she is like Judith Miller protecting politicians who lied to us, she may have been wrong in her assessment in the import of what she knew as how it fit into a broader investigation. But the malign intent that you seem to be wanting to heap on her as part of your what you perceive as something that as you've won some type of Academy Award or something, because we. Most of us, not you, you were just agnostic as to whether there should be an investigation of the Trump administration without really knowing any of the details, like there was evidence of Russian meddling. But the rest of us, including everyone you've cited today, agreed there should be an investigation.
Right.
So you're going around parading now that the investigation is over and has done its job. You're walking around as if you were some type of clairvoyant. All you did is properly critique the media for getting carried away with a story, but you've been unable to list one concrete fact. And I can list hundreds of thousands of concrete facts as to why the scale of and the implications of what the media did running up to this is nowhere near what happened during the Bush administration with lies into Iraq. And I can point to hundreds of thousands of concrete facts.
Here's a concrete fact for you. Marcy Wheeler was asked by Bob Wright on Blogging Kids a couple days ago about this whole episode where she gave over information to the FBI that she still won't elaborate on. And Marcy said, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's totally panned out as to what I handed over. The FBI may well have decided that I'm, quote, crazy. And I think that's, you know, plausible because the rationale that she gave for why she handed this over to the FBI, and I'm going to quote you something here that she wrote. If something happens to me, if someone releases stolen information about me or knocks me off tomorrow, everyone will know why and who likely did it. So she said she was saying that she could have been killed by Russians.
Well, no, not by Russians.
Handing over, oh yeah.
Well, you don't know. You don't know who she was referring to.
Who was she saying she was going to be killed by?
Well, listen, we know that Donald Trump has had associates who are involved in the mafia, right?
Oh, okay. So she was going to be killed by
you're aware, like Felix Sater.
Felix Sater. Trump conspiracy.
Felix Sater. Well, listen, you don't know what contributed to her fear.
Well, I don't, and that's why people have been asking her to expound on it, and she steadfastly refused. And let me also give you another quote as to what impelled her to hand over this information to the FBI and, again, commit a massive journalistic breach that nobody really bothered to scrutinize because she was assumed to have credibility. I should say that she has impressive research skills, and I followed her work for many years, but she said as a rationale for why she did this, quote, this investigation is not primarily an investigation into Donald Trump. It's an investigation into the people who attacked the United States. It's time Republicans started acting like that matters. You know what?
I'm glad you mentioned that because that bore out to be absolutely correct, wasn't it?
Attack on the United States?
Excuse me, Michael. We have already stipulated, haven't we, that the Russians hacked in to Clinton's emails, right? We have already established that they have attempted to alter the outcome of the election. Whether they did or not, we don't know. But yes, you've just, I appreciate you bringing that up, because I think that's sure. about as exculpatory of your charges as you would want, where she said this is not about, because theoretically, right,
well, I brought
that
up
could still be in play, and we don't even know, do we, Michael? Or do you now have the same knowledge you had in July of 2016?
Nothing about the knowledge that I've accumulated since then leads me to believe that the quote, that the characterization of, quote, attacked on the United States is accurate. That's incredibly
insensitive. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Michael. Are you accusing somebody of being hyperbolic? Mike, is that what you're doing? Are you accusing someone of being hyperbolic in a blog post, Michael? Is that what this is about? You don't like her hyperbole?
I don't like the fact that she was touted as this expert on Trump-Russia, including on MSNBC and the New York Times, on the basis of some delusional fairy tale that she crafted for herself.
What delusional fairy tale? You don't know this, Michael. You talk about getting out ahead of your skis, buddy. You should be very careful.
That hasn't been borne out. It's blown up in her face.
It's not over yet, though, is it?
Sam, can I just ask you a quick question? Do you think that, you know, in a vacuum, a journalist burning a source to the FBI raises ethical concerns?
In a vacuum? Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so then why didn't you probe her more in depth about her rationale for doing this? I went back and listened to some of that initial interview you did with her in July of 2018, and all she said was, you know, I can't talk about that. She gave kind of cryptic hints as to what her reasoning was. And even now, after Mueller obliterated her reasoning for it, she's still not.
Mueller has not. First of all, you don't know what Mueller has done. You don't know what Mueller has done. You don't know what she's done. You don't know. I'll tell you why, Michael. Because I have followed Marcy's work for over a decade.
So have I, which is why.
Excuse me, Michael. Let me finish. I followed her work, and I find her to be incredibly credible. All of her reporting in the past has panned out. All right. She started off as a skeptic. She has been a critique as loud and as significant of a critical voice on the national security apparatus as anyone in this country. As anyone in this country, she has done far more research into this than I know that you have. And so that is why I gave her wide berth, and I trust her judgment. And the reason why, Michael, I wouldn't have you on. I wouldn't have you on, you know, since you reported on Sandy from this program, frankly, is because I don't think that you have the same level of rigor or integrity. That's why.
Okay.
But I appreciate your coming on. I think you've had your say. If you want one final word to use your adjectives about how disgusting all of this is and how angry you are at you know, various individuals becoming stars on MSNBC, please.
I am angry, not just about that, but because a mammoth fraud was perpetrated on the American public and had all kinds of deleterious consequences that it's going to take years, if not decades, to fully reckon with, as Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald and others have meticulously outlined.
Stop pulling that
into this. Just about Marcy Wheeler, you know, the thing was, you know, once she became a collaborator with the FBI, she ceased to perform any kind of recognizable journalistic function and should have been treated with extreme skepticism after that very point. But instead, she was treated to like glowing Washington Post profiles where she was, you know, it was said that, you know, she burned a source because she had this, you know, really revelation of conscience. You know, she had all these easygoing interviews with people like you where she wasn't challenged on why she did this massive breach. And it turns out that, sure enough, all her analysis.
No, that's not true. As a result, the last part, listen, I'll let you editorialize all you want, but you can't make up stuff.
I'm not making up anything.
All right. Bye, Michael. Thank you for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, I didn't get to iron out my complaint. Excuse you.
And thus,
I sat here.
And listen, I just want to say, like, I am open to having this conversation with people who I think, frankly, have a little bit more integrity than Michael. I don't think being a martyr and taking his position, is a sign of some form of integrity. I think, you know, some of what we're seeing, it seems to me, is a vestige of you know, other battles. And to say that you're agnostic, first of all, I don't know how in July of 2016 he was aware that there was an intelligence investigation into Donald Trump. I'm not sure how he knew this of 2016. Maybe it was reported. I don't recall it being reported. But maybe it was. And he clearly was wrong. Let's put these up. I forgot to even use these. Let's put these up. Yeah. Michael Tracy was completely wrong when it came to, let's see, in January of 2016, there's still no hard evidence for Russian hacking. 17. Let's go forward. There is no hard evidence. And then Russian hacking has to be one of the truly most ridiculous propaganda offenses in modern U.S. history. Why is it that every blaring report about Russian hacking falls apart on a moment's notice? This is that it's in 2016. Obviously, now if you're going to take the Barr memo seriously, then he was wrong, I think is the word. I mean, and I could add all sorts of adjectives to make it dramatically wrong.
Colossally wrong about a fairy tale.
Colossally wrong about his fairy tale. It's a severe collective media failure.
A mountain of misinformation.
Any attempt to proffer alternative theory gets it cast as conspiratorial. An Iraq-sized mistake. The media once again will be to blame. What a coincidence. A year and a half later, they're still convinced of that. Go ahead. Government officials are furiously and selectively leaking classified information to paint a certain narrative about Russian hacking. Apparently, one of those people who leaked that classified information is in jail now for 5 years.
William Barr, too.
One of those people are in jail now for collaborating with The Intercept.
That's not very graceful. Matt.
That's Matt.
Matt, where is
you're going to be suspended,
Jamie,
for that?
I hope you didn't cut to that.
Matt, would you put up the the quote tweet of me?
Oh, yes,
please, because I actually there is 70-80% of this is just personal grievance and annoyance, because Mike, I was the one who said this morning, all right, be a little diplomatic. And then I saw that you put my name in your mouth, and I said, okay, Sam, go ahead. We could even do Maxine Waters references. But I just, like, there were people on this story who did genuinely take a highly agnostic position, as I think mostly this show did. And so I agree. I think you're undermining. Because I'm a defender of the Taibbi piece. I think the Taibbi critique is very important. And this is what your victory lap is. Is I made a tweet, which I've actually, again, as part of my agnosticism, I've said for a while, I think people are overkilling on this. And it's also just a joke. Russia, Russia, Russia isn't a strategy. And Michael Tracy, like, his hit list of people he wants to parade on is so large that he finds this and goes, Nizler was enabling the fraudulent Russian narrative by giving it tacit online progressive TM support. And I actually literally don't know what he's talking about.
Well,
but it's
you're
like,
from
you
Brooklyn.
Want me to like actually, if I live in Brooklyn or that I should have run into the studio during a Marcy Wheeler interview and said, no, that's not, because frankly, while I am a little bit more concerned where this is ending up, I think there are some differences here, which are fine. I took the same view that Sam did to Marcy Wheeler. I'll totally cop that. She's an incredibly serious reporter who I first got exposed to trying to understand what the NSA story was, where she was a critic of the national security state and totally on point. So even if you want to, you know, run some laps and distill some lessons and critique, I agree. I think John Brennan being on MSNBC is a travesty. Why are you doing
it? If only because it keeps me off more.
That's the best part of it. But like, dude, it's you're making this you and people on both sides of this equation from the beginning. As you've, I like what you said, Sam. It's a proxy for other things, and you're turning this into silly Twitter nonsense. And when you quote tweet me, you get Andrew Yang people in my mentions, and I will not abide that, sir.
Wow, I hadn't pegged you guys all for such smug Brooklyn hipsters. Do better.
That was uncomfortable.
What's that? I enjoyed that way more than the libertarian debates are good. The race IQ debates.
The race, that was better than race IQ debate, but it was not as good as Jesse Peterson, who really did some work on Sam.
It's good to Sam to bounce back with a victory.
As far as Taibbi's, I think like the media criticism is absolutely warranted. And I'm not, frankly, from a political standpoint, I don't think we ever played an Adam Schiff.
We did. That's also video, I don't want to get
clip
too,
or anything. But,
no,
but
we
like,
didn't.
But I'm not convinced that in terms of what the politicians did. Because here's the thing: I never, ever, ever, ever believed that this was going to cause World War III. And for those who did, I'm also not going on Twitter saying that I was the only one who didn't think, who was not, praising and following every gasp about the Russia investigation. And I was the only one who knew that it would not cause World War III.
Not only that, but I'm sorry. I just want to say, like, you know what? This is absolutely objectively, you could, if you didn't use so much ridiculous hyperbole and talk about World War III, is this helpful for Russian-U.S. relations and figuring out longstanding problems and cooling tensions? No, it's not. But again,
well, we still have the evidence.
Say that.
That,
well, no,
we still have
I'm
the evidence
about,
that Russia.
Well, no,
that's tried to under influence that bucket. The election.
That's under that bucket. Part of one of the things that they're going to need to do, along with China and everybody else, is actually. I mean, that's a whole literature amongst some people who do IR. What does a new world of Geneva conventions look like in the era of drones and hacking and all of this sort of thing? But the broader point is that you could still say we don't want to feed a military-industrial complex narrative. We don't want to be melodramatic and overly hawkish about Russia. But if you just say doing a segment on something that in fact actually happened is tantamount to declaring a global war. Well, by the way, going on a show like Tucker, where's Tucker Carlson's? Here's one segment that I would do. Cause I said yesterday that the only reason you ever play a Tucker Carlson piece is to criticize him or explain how even when he's right, he's dangerous. Here's a segment I would give pure positive coverage to. If Tucker Carlson went on his show and was like, I'm really concerned about war. And that's why, even though I support Trump, and he's my president, pulling out of the Iran deal is the most catastrophically dangerous thing that has happened in the world in the past 2.5 years. Which, by the way, it is, you motherfucker. Why don't you give that 20% of your attention? That is a catastrophe. And if he did a report that highlighted that, I would have played it on this show. And I would have said, credit where credit is due. Sometimes a fascist clock is right, twice a day. Here we go. Let's play the clip. He's right.
I mean, it really does smack of a lack of integrity to launch into a media critique, which I think is the critique is valid. But I mean, let's be honest. You get on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News. I mean, honestly, the tacit endorsement. Did Michael Tracy, when he was on Tucker Carlson, did he say to like Tucker, before he was on air, like, hey, man, you should really lay off the hatred of immigrants and stop bemoaning the fact that we're losing our white culture in this country?
I'll go back and check to make sure.
You know, there's fear-mongering about Russia. There's also fear-mongering about gypsies.
It just seems a little concern trolly to me. I mean, I don't know the most about Michael Tracy, but do you really think he cares that much about the credibility of the bourgeois liberal
that's
media?
That's the other thing. It's like the stakes seem to be that the corporate media has lost credibility, which
right.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm a leftist, and I think that's fine. People shouldn't believe the things that they see in corporate media.
I remember
they shouldn't
give
them 100% credence.
Well, and here's the thing. And I would also add, not only is it disingenuous to say, like, I'm really concerned with the credibility of MSNBC and CNN. And that's why I go on Fox.
I'm doing it for your own good.
Not only is that disingenuous, but the implications of cable news, I think, are far less. And again, you know, like, I think there would be a better argument if we actually, if there could be concrete things. And I understand that the world clock, the doomsday clock, is closer to midnight, or it was, you know, 6 months ago or whatever. But I do think there were other factors involved there. And we cannot divine this, but to point to that seems to me to be a little bit disingenuous as well. But I, like I said, willing to put that in, as shaky as that is, in that column. But there are no other real world implications of this that I think that you could point to that where the hype around the investigation, because again, the investigation found that the Russians did engage in this activity. And I don't happen to think that it materially impacted the outcome of the election. I think there was a lot of other things. I think Comey reading that letter. I think not going to, you know, campaigning through the Rust Belt.
Sucking.
I think trying to protect Paul Ryan for a deal on repatriating taxes. I think going at Trump, you know, on personality and on you know, the her CV. I think that was also a mistake. I think there was like I said, we've been through this 100 times. There was a dozen mistakes that contributed, that all had to align in many respects.
Not to mention her record, right?
But I would not be happy about, like, hey, we tried to put Guaido in Venezuela, but we didn't succeed, so no blood, no foul. Like, yeah, I don't think that should be our policy. I think that's wrong. And I don't think that we can sit there and say, like, it's okay for Russia to do this. And I don't think that we've heard the last of Marcy Wheeler. She's not hiding somewhere. And yes, I will give her a greater berth than I will from people I have skepticism of. And people can make their own assessments as to whether that means that I am not to be trusted. And people can go listen or read Michael Tracy or go to other shows. I'm perfectly happy with that.
I think you hit the nail on the head just now, though, when you said that you give Marcy Wheeler credibility and maybe not someone like Michael Tracy. And I think, not to go ad hominem, but that may be some of what is driving his obsession with this.
Well, yeah, it seems weird, the fixation on Brooklyn media types, and like, then to say he's one of only like 5 people who've gotten the story right, which is like, I remember a lot, like, talking about this a lot, and we always minimize like the collusion angle because it seemed obvious that's why the Trump camp was pumping it up, is because collusion's always going to be the harder thing to prove. So we were saying, like, let's look at the corruption. That was always the line.
But what also makes no sense is, what does that mean to have the story, gotten the story right? Like, I guessed what the conclusion of an investigation that I think was necessary, what it would be. Like, if the investigation, if you think, and now, to be fair, Michael Tracy claims he was agnostic about the investigation, but everyone else he cited thinks that it was legitimate.
Well, he also claims he's in the same group as Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi.
Yes,
so.
I mean, maybe he is. But my point is that if you think an investigation is warranted, then you must say that there are questions that need to be investigated, questions that are the answer of which have not been provided yet. So the outcome of the investigation, all you're doing is like betting on on the results of a basketball game. The critique of what the media has been doing throughout the entire time seems to me to be unchanged. You either hype it too much in real time, 100%. Completely distinct of what the outcome of the investigation is, or you don't. And there's no doubt that the media has gotten out in front of its skis on this. And to the extent that, frankly, I didn't see the stakes I still don't see the stakes, which is why we did not dedicate this show to constant criticism of it. But it's also why we did not spend our time on this show on the 600 episodes that we've probably done since the launch of this investigation, maybe 700, I don't know, 500, why we covered other things and had, you know, Marcion maybe four times to talk about the specific, three times to talk about the specific investigation. But when Michael Flynn gets fired, we're going to have her on.
To fearmonger.
Well, to fearmonger, of course. Like, man, that's not weird. The head of national security, the national security advisor, want to kidnap a dude?
Time for some Russia
for money? That's not weird.
There are grifters on both sides of this thing. And there are deranged people with brainworms who are fixated on it on the side of the resistance libs and the people who bend the stick too far in the other direction. And I don't really trust either of their credibility.
Yeah, I was saying well, to Sam yesterday.
If that's your bailiwick.
I feel tied between people who want me to care about how good the investigation and the media coverage was versus how bad people. And I just don't think it's that important.
Like, if that's your bailiwick, I don't trust you as a leftist. I'm sorry. You should be reporting on so many other things.
All right.
And the liberals at least don't pretend to be leftists.
Well, you know what? I guess we're not going to go into the fun half. We'll just, it'll be a freebie Friday. Michael has to go, everyone.
Oh. I have to go.
Michael's going out there. I've got to go create a bunch of sock puppet accounts on Twitter and go after.
It was a nice ratio, and I don't even have a fraction of the followers the guy has. It's tough stuff.
I have two more patrons.
But hold on. This is, we got to figure out what we're going to do on Monday. we're going to get to this sound in a second, but I want to read this email because I would have totally forgotten. I know the official anniversary was a couple months ago. Dear Mr. Cedar et al., and alas, I ignore the pre-AAR shows on New York local radio. But for me, the anniversary of the Majority Report will always be March 30th, 2004. That is the official anniversary of this program. In terms of starting as a daily show.
It was on what's his name? On The Best Show?
No, well, the Sharpling show, that was just a one-off in February of 2002.
Ah.
2003, right before the Iraq War invasion. When there were real stakes to hyping a massive lie. As opposed to like, oh God, I can't believe that dude is now has a contributorship on a cable network. Motherfuck. Anyways, I know the official anniversary was a couple of months ago, and alas, I ignore the pre-AAR shows on New York local radio, but for me, the anniversary of the Majority Report will always be 2004, March 30th. I was 18 at the time. Just starting to get into politics, but pretty clueless. And there was a moment there where I probably could have gone either way. The show came at just the right time. Your work has had a big influence over me in the last 1.5 decades. And while disabilities, thanks for the hardship, membership, have sadly kept me from going on to make the world much better, I like to think that I've helped convince at least a couple of people to think differently themselves over the years. Thank you for your work and congratulations on your resilience. Fondly. Alan, thank you so much for the email. It's really gratifying.
And that counts. Convincing people counts as making things better.
Absolutely.
That's been one of my favorite things about especially meeting people at live shows when you hear about like them like wayward scrolling YouTube for libertarian debates and then finally they see the light.
I did not believe that happened at all until I started working here.
It's documented revelation.
All right, let's, what do we got here? Oh, this is actually encouraging. Like, I'm not the biggest Jay Inslee, proponent, but this I thought was a very good media appearance. I understand why more so why politicians would go on a program like this, because you're trying to reach as many people as possible. And I don't think, I mean, I think there's definitely an open case as to whether or not politicians should go on to Fox. I certainly don't think others should go on to Fox unless they are in some way at odds with the narrative that Fox wants to push. And Inslee seemingly seems to not be at odds, but is really rolling over Steve Doocy here. Steve Doocy thought that he was getting the lightweight assignment, talking about the Green New Deal. But here is, and I love the Chiron, 2020 hopeful makes the case for climate change.
Go climate change.
Inspirational leader, not a pessimistic one in the White House. I think I'm ready for that job. This country needs a spark of optimism.
All right. A lot to unpack with that. Are you suggesting that climate change is why there's flooding out in Nebraska right now?
Yeah, the science is really abundantly clear on this. We need a president who believes in science and gravity. And the climate change modeling by the scientists are clear. It's going to cause more forest fires. It's going to cause more flooding. At the same time, in various places, more drought.
Right.
And so we're getting it on both ends of the situation here. I met a scientist from the University of Washington last night who suggested that we ought to believe both in climate science and gravity. Well, look, if you went to 10 doctors and they all told you you had cancer, you don't sit there and deny it. It's time to have science. This is a scientifically literate country, and we need a scientifically literate president who really believes in the can-do spirit of this nation. Well, I intend to be that president.
Well, I grew up in Kansas, which is right next to Nebraska. I remember 50 years ago the flooding then, so I don't know that people were talking about climate change back then. But that's why
They weren't, but they're taking it about it now. When your town's burning down, the people of Paradise, California are talking about climate change. And they deserve a president who will protect them rather than the oil industries. And I'm tired of putting out billions of dollars to the fossil fuel industries and the lobbyists that he's put in charge of this nation. He wanted to drain the swamp. He's put the swamp in charge of our tax policy. It's just wrong.
Steve Doocy just officially got apathetically steamrolled. That was pretty impressive. I mean, Inslee going around with that, maybe there's a climate change czar in the next administration, if we're lucky. And someone like that seems to be well-suited to, because this is obviously a tremendous emergency.
If people believe in it. Like, my friend's dad in rural Rhode Island, who's a Trump supporter and has a ton of guns, I kind of take him as a bellwether for a lot of this stuff. Even he believes in climate change now. And he cares about it because he likes to go out in nature and hunt.
This has never been, for a long time, it hasn't been about that the people are divided on this issue. It's that the powerful are.
Donald Trump was out in Michigan last night, very excited that he's not going to be indicted for coordinating with the Russians who were involved in the campaign, at least according to the Barr memo. Here he is talking about what is this clip here?
This is the supporters outside being very excited for the QAnon.
I want to see Donald Trump feeling very excited. So what does he do? He translates this excitement into an attack on people who are escaping intense violence in their country and the people who represent them in their right to seek asylum under U.S. law.
Promises of amnesty, amnesty. You have people coming up. You know, they're all met by the lawyers of... And they come out, they're all met by the lawyers, and they say the following phrase: I am very afraid for my life. I am afraid for my life. Okay. And then I look at the guy. He looks like he just got out of the ring. He's the heavyweight champion of the world. He's a French person. It's a big, fat con job, folks. It's a big, fat con job.
Well, how despicable of a human being do you have to be? We just talked about the other day reports from El Salvador that policemen were fleeing the country because they were afraid of the violence.
And they cut the domestic violence exception?
They cut the domestic violence exception. They cut the there was one more exception. It escapes me at the moment. But they've cut these, not exceptions, but rather factors for which someone could apply for asylum. I mean, this is how despicable. How low can you go here? The number of asylum seekers who actually get asylum, I think, is somewhere around like 20 or 30%, maybe not even that high. And people travel. They put themselves at enormous risk to come up to the border because they are terrified.
Well, this is his leitmotif, though, and he's always going to return to that no matter what. And he's probably feeling a little bit happy right now. He's back on his bullshit.
What's this? Oh, well, this one is. Is this the wind energy? This is number 8. Let's do this one. Donald Trump is also not the brightest bulb on the planet. And I think he knows that a lot of his supporters are also not the brightest bulbs on the planet. Why can't we have renewable energy? Because the wind that will provide energy for your TV sometimes doesn't blow hard. That's not a joke.
If Hillary got in, you wouldn't have that stat, I can tell you right now. You'd be doing windmills. And if it doesn't blow, you can forget about television for that night. Darling, I want to watch television. I'm sorry. The wind isn't blowing. I know a lot about wind. I know a lot about wind.
Oh, my God.
He does know a lot about wind, being a windbag himself.
Yeah. your president, ladies and gentlemen.
I've noticed a lot of, I think that's, this may be conspiratory, but I feel like that's a secret movement to try to prejudice people against the look of windmills. Like, oh, windmills are fine, but they look so gross. They make the landscape look bad.
I've heard of that, but I think they actually look cool.
I hear a lot from North Dakotans.
Let's put this. Yeah, we don't want artificial things, but put that cell phone tower up so that we can get cell phone reception. Let's do him deciding he wants to run against the Green New Deal.
The Green New Deal. Tonight, because I don't want to talk them out of it too soon. Because I love campaigning against the Green New Deal. I want them to make that a big part of their platform. No more airplanes, no more cows. One car per family. One car. You're going to love that in Michigan. Hey, how do you like the idea of one car per family? I don't think so. You know, I don't think one car per family in Michigan plays too well. Do you agree? Right? Not too well. And it's got to be, of course, an electric car, even if only goes, what, 160 miles? What do you do? It's 160 miles, darling. Where do I get a charge? Where do I get a charge, darling? No, we want to have a lot of cars per family. We want people to lead a great life, and we want people to make those cars, and we want all of these companies to keep coming to Michigan and all of the other great states and building those.
So there it is, Green New Deal. Hope that there aren't Democratic advisors right now looking at that and trying to develop big lessons of the fans who come out to see Donald Trump do his comedy routine.
Yeah, no, like I said, even the Trump dads who are building doomsday bunkers in their yards against marauding urban gangs would rather not have to use them.
We're going to do reverse psychology and they're going to fall for it immediately. Don't. I want you to make this a big, big part of your campaigns.
Oh, let's do this Pat Buchanan. It's been a long time since we saw Pat Buchanan. People forget, Pat Buchanan used to have a show on MSNBC. When I first started doing hits on MSNBC, it was as if I was going on to like the Baby Fox, Scarborough Country, Pat Buchanan show, Tucker Carlson show, I think it was. I can't remember who else. And here is Pat Buchanan on, wow, that is a very flattering picture of him. An oddly flattering picture because he's younger there too, much younger. But Laura Ingraham, Fox News host, has a radio show. And here he is. I remember in 2004 being in Radio Row and at the Republican National Convention. And, or maybe it was the, no, I'm sorry, it was the Democratic National Convention. And talking to a guy who didn't quite understand what Air America was, I think. But, you know, I told him about it. So he knew that it was on the, you know, liberal, I guess. And he was bemoaning the neocons. He was like, he said, I'm a Pat Buchanan guy myself. And I'm like, oh, that's right. He goes, yeah, the neocons, they're all Jews. And I was just like, ah, that's my understanding, yes. Just sort of like, they're so comfortable with their bigotry. It was stunning, really stunning. I was just like, yeah, tell me more, but I've got to. But here is Pat Buchanan still carrying the same torch he has for the Republican Party for 30 years, well, more. But it was 92 when he ran as a president under the auspices of a culture war and the really the death of the white race that was taking place. Of course, it takes a long time the white genocide to take place. And here he is, you know, with a slight twist on what's going on here. We'll unpack this statement because this is really sort of unbelievable.
We give 1.3 million green cards, which I think is way too many, every year in the United States. Most Americans polled think it's either keep it the same or lower the number.
And 90% of these are folks coming from what you might call the second or the third world. And people are fundamentally basically good, but there's no doubt there's a greater difficulty in assimilating people from different civilizations and cultures and ethnicities and races in the United States than other folks. And we know this is true. African Americans have been here since 1619. They've helped build and create the nation. They're part of its culture and history. And yet we haven't fully assimilated African American citizens. At the same time, we're bringing in millions and millions of people. We're conducting an experiment, which, you know, to me, I'm a pessimist. It's not working, it seems to me. But Ms. Harris, what does she say? I mean, she's virtually in the first part of that comment she made, she's calling for open borders. That's the end of countries.
To be fair, I haven't listened to the full interview when Laura Ingraham says, hey, Pat, I got to stop you there. The idea that somehow African Americans have not assimilated to our culture is stunningly offensive. And the idea that African Americans, have not blended in with white people enough yet and have not adopted white culture after all we did to beat it into them, literally, is really offensive, Pat. I mean, this is the idea that she can maintain a radio show that is sponsored by major corporations for allowing something like that to be unchecked
is stunning.
I will say I was a little surprised when Kamala Harris said, no nations, no borders, fuck law and order. She's really pandering to the far left there.
Even if Kamala Harris said that, that would be a second order issue. Like, they want to criticize that, but the idea of claiming that African Americans, their presence is somehow some other to America. Like, America existed as a white nation. We brought them in as, like, in the annex. And the idea that they, you know, like, the idea that America doesn't, that American culture does not include black people is beyond, like, it's beyond offensive. It is, the idea that Coca-Cola or whatever it is going to advertise on Laura Ingraham's show. The idea that somebody can have media critiques and support the outlet that pays her money? Really?
Yeah, I think the slave states and then the subsequent Jim Crow South assimilated black people exactly to the extent they wanted to.
Yeah, and I also, I mean, just the idea that, like, somehow, like, African Americans have not assimilated to our culture. What the f- where is he living?
They created the good parts of our culture. Let's be real.
That's just stunning to me.
It's a white nationalist sentiment.
Yeah, and when he talks about civilization, that just goes back to all those ideas about the West as this civilization that have been constructed fairly recently as part of the right-wing authoritarian white nationalist program. It's just, it's bullshit.
Let's go back. We got one more clip of Donald Trump, and this is really the most important one in many respects. This is going to have the most sort of like real-world implications because the more responses he gets from this, the more he's going to say it. Like, he doesn't care what it does to the Republicans. And so I hope that he, every time he brings up the idea of repealing the ACA or Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, he gets a great response, because that's what's going to dictate him saying that in the future. And here he is talking about how easy it's going to be to repeal.
I feel like I heard this before.
Yeah. We're going to repeal, replace. Much better.
To pay a lot of money for the privilege of not having to buy bad health care, okay? Not too good. So we're going to get rid of Obamacare. And I said it the other day. The Republican Party will become the party of great health care. It's good. It's important. And we've created new options to help Americans purchase affordable health plans all across state lines. You now have options you would have never had.
Pause it. Incidentally, apparently he did not get the message that a federal court struck that down. They were offering junk plans outside of the exchanges, outside of the PP of the PPACA, the patient protections. And they were cheaper, obviously, because they were like selling, we're selling new cars. It's, they're much cheaper. Now, they don't have engines, but they're much cheaper.
It's the deep state, folks.
The Democrats are pushing socialist, government-run health care that bans private health insurance for 180 million Americans. Now, think of
we
it.
We love it.
A lot of you
insurance
have private
companies.
Plans, and they're great. They're great. And you want that. They want to take them away. That's not going to work. I don't think that's going to work too well. Republicans want you to have an affordable plan that's just right for you. And by the way, you can use your doctor. Remember that? That was a lie. 28 times he said, that was a lie. You get cheaper premiums and much lower deductibles. The deductibles on Obamacare are so high, on average, $7,000. You don't get to use it unless a really great tragedy hits, and then you don't really want it because you don't give a damn about your deductible, right? You'll be in a position where you say, who cares about the let's see if I can live.
He's back on his bullshit.
Lastly, let's go to this. I don't care about that, BB. I'm going to see the QAnon. Here is the, here are the Trump folks. I like how sort of almost like calm they can be with this QAnon knowledge that they have. Yeah. Here we go.
It's weird to hear people say "Go Q."
Well, no, Q is are the people embedded in
QAnon? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's bizarre to see them just do that, like offer that up without any prompt. Like,
so many Q.
Well, Q might be listening.
Look at how many QAnon. Like, it's shocking. There's that many who know about.
Yeah, that's what. Where we go one, we go all is also a QAnon thing.
Now, do you understand what the QAnon thing is? They're cheering Q because Q is the mole inside of the deep state that is providing all this information and fighting for Trump.
Possibly multiple moles.
But I mean, just like...
Possibly Trump himself.
I'm trying to think of like a possible analog for a Democratic candidate. Like what? Like if you walked... down the line of like a, I don't know, a Bernie rally or a Warren rally or an Obama rally or a Kamala Harris rally. Like like they're walking 15 feet and they find another series of supporters. What conspiracy?
That's entirely parallel to the candidate.
Yeah, like, but I mean, even like, what bat crap crazy conspiracy?
I'm afraid to make analogies now, so I won't make one.
Well, you're thinking the Russia investigation.
Yeah, I mean,
actually a thing there.
But there was an investigation.
Yeah, I'm just saying the way psychologically that some people engage with it is similar to the way these people engage with QAnon.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose if everybody, if they went down the line and people were going like, Mueller, he's going to save us. He's actually like, if now there was like a thing where like Mueller's actually doing it like a double Lindy. He knows that Barr is working for Trump. So Mueller put it in there and there's a ticking time bomb and it's going to blow up.
They're going to find the Trump Putin sex tape and then Trump will be canceled and Hillary will be president.
But even if the Krasenstein brothers run for president, I doubt you'd get that organic of a response from one of their lines.
Right.
No, it's definitely a minority.
Louise Mensch, like a Louise Mensch convention maybe.
Let 1,000 Louise Mensch bloom.
We should not have had her on so many times. That was, in retrospect,
you really should
it was
apologize.
A huge mistake to have Louise Mensch on half a dozen times. That was a huge mistake. And I would say that the Eric Garland poster that we have in the studio is probably now. We should take that down.
Yeah, I'm going to burn my game theory game board.
That was, I should not have had that tweet tattooed on my back.
Yeah, I'm going to stop getting tattoos of Mueller at my Brooklyn hipster Mueller tattoo parties.
Yeah, actually,
cover up.
Who does Mueller look close enough to that people could just adjust their tattoos to look like?
Like any old white guy.
Who has old white guy tattooed on their...
Roger Stone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all right.
Poly representation.
All right. It's late. Folks, sorry we did not get to calls or IMs today, but I think we did some fine work.
We didn't
get
to any schmucks today.
We didn't get to any of you schmucks today. That's what really set me off. You don't call our callers.
Yeah, don't you dare disrespect our callers.
Do not. All right, folks, we'll see you on Monday. It might take all the strength I got.
to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and